you know, armed to the teeth, which they are, and they're ready to rock and roll, and they've been trained to rock and roll, it's damn intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
Damn intimidating.
And email just coming in from Mark in Florida with photos of the...
The window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the tashes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, Liz Rose, Communications Director for the Campaign for America's Future, going to be here talking about the jobs that the Republicans promised in their grand pledge. Oh, how wonderful it was going to be if we just elected them in November of 2010, and all the jobs that would come just flowing down the rivers like honey. Everything would be just wonderful if we just put them into power. And if you look at the jobs bill they put out yesterday, they're saying, you know, if we were in power, this is how we would lead. Basically doing the same stuff that got us into the mess that we're in. Also, we're going to talk about how we take back the American dream as the folks over at the Campaign for America's Future wrapped up their Take Back the American Dream conference a couple weeks back. So looking forward to that. In the second hour, Yana Kunichoff, she's going to be here talking about her website, surveillanceinthehomeland.org, and all of the... We've been seeing a lot of this. I mean, you know, in Carlisle even, they were talking about we need cameras all over the place because, you know, the criminal element might be there. And in New York, they got cameras absolutely everywhere. When we were in Philadelphia for the start of the Occupy Philadelphia, you know, there were people going, I can't believe the police are recording us. And I'm going, of course the cops are recording you. They got street cameras over there and the helicopter cameras up there. You're being recorded everywhere. And not to mention, everybody now with these smartphones has a video recorder, and from every angle, things are now being recorded. In the third hour, Jefferson Pepper, activist spokesman for the Occupy Harrisburg group, going to be here just a little under 3 hours now, just about 3 hours. Occupy Harrisburg will begin right in front of the steps of the Capitol. They're on 3rd Street, so we're hoping folks will come out for the 1201 beginning of Occupy Harrisburg. We're going to be there for some time talking to people and participating in the event. Don't know how this is going to turn out. Don't know how many people are going to be there. Hoping everyone comes down and participates. I think it's going to be a great, great endeavor. So please come on down and see us. The big story today, no bashing of hippies in New York. Bloomberg backed off. They didn't go in with the sticks and the pepper spray and the sound cannons and the goodbye gun and all of the wonderful crowd control techniques that the government has to use to beat up on hippies. I did see some very interesting videos, and we'll talk about those. But in Colorado, they did go in and beat up some hippies. In fact, 23 people were arrested in the early morning hours as the police evicted the protesters of the Occupy Denver camp. Here again, you know, one of these things, you got to wonder why. Let the people alone. Why do you have to come down with this heavy-handedness? And look, Bloomberg's an independent. Colorado Governor Hickenlooper, he's a Democrat. They went in this morning, and you know what? They cleared everybody out. Now that they've kicked everybody out, they claim that they're going to have a police presence there so that none of those protesters, none of those people return. So the protesters did what I would have done. They just started walking up and down the sidewalks, surrounded the park, which is good. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's gonna, you gotta stay your ground. Absolutely have to stand the ground. And, you know, today was going to be, I think a lot of people were waking up, and I know I woke up, looked at the news, to see if Bloomberg had indeed sent in the army of the skullcrackers, and he didn't. But what I've heard is this amazing right-wing frame. And maybe you heard it too, but I heard it most of the morning, that the protesters were setting up the police. And it's really an amazing kind of twist. It's kind of a classic abuser mentality, kind of the, yeah, she was asking for it. Hey, that's why I had to smack her. She was asking for it. That classic abuser mentality. You know, the protesters are setting up the police because, you know, the police don't want to crack their heads, but, you know, if they have to and those protesters make them, well, they're setting it up. I mean, does that make sense to you on any level? No, these people want to be out there. They want to have their voices heard. They just want to have their general assemblies. They want to be a presence. And like in New York, that's private property, which is kind of amazing to me, that the city would be able to, and I'm sure there's some ordinances, and there will be more in the future, trust me, as these occupations go away, you will see ordinance popping up, ordinance after ordinance popping up, making sure that that doesn't happen again. And you look at what the right's trying to do, and I look at, you know, Representative King from New York, Peter King, who said, and you gotta love this, he was on one of the right-wing talk shows, he says, you know, it's real important not to give legitimacy to these people who are in the streets. He said, I remember what happened in the 60s when the left wing took to the streets and somehow the media glorified them and it ended up shaping policy. We can't allow that to happen. Yeah, you know, we really, 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 we can't allow that to happen now. We cannot ask the top 1% to pay taxes. We just can't. We can't rein in Wall Street. We can't rein in all of the corporate abuses. We can't do any of that stuff. We can't close the income equality. We can't have any oversight or over any regulation. We can't have any of that stuff. No, that's bad. It's going to hurt the top 1%, obviously, which is who Peter King is a shill for. But I think it's pretty funny that he would be so blatant about it. And Ed Rendell was on the same show saying, well, you know, now they need to get off the street and go to the ballot box. Well, you know what? The ballot box doesn't work. 83 senators voted for those crummy free trade agreements. 83 voted for that South Korean free trade agreement. 77 voted for Panama and Colombia. But I thought they were polarized. I thought the two parties couldn't agree on anything. You know what they agree on? They agree on Wall Street. They agree on the big banksters. They agree on free trade that destroys jobs in this country. You know why those people are in the streets? They're in the streets because they need jobs. And it's about damn time someone takes to the streets. And here's the reality. And I'm hoping tonight things are extremely peaceful, and I know they will be. But I think the Republicans and the powers to be want these protesters to turn violent. They want it. They can taste it. Which is why the frames you hear, oh, they're violent hippies, and oh, they're out, they want to tear down democracy. They want to destroy the nation. We hear all this stuff all the time. But when in reality, what they want to be able to do, what the power and elites and the Republicans want to see happen, is they want to see this whole thing crushed. They want to see one guy get out of hand so they can go in and use it as an excuse to crack heads and crush this entire thing. You look at New York. There's a video going around. It's a series of videos right now from every single angle you can come up with, which is, you know, a great thing for these smartphones and good thing for video cameras. But, you know, the New York Police Department had these little scooters. And this cop on his little scooter goes just barreling into the crowd. He hits somebody, knocks him to the ground, drags him halfway across the yard there. What do the police do? They grab the guy who got hit, baton to his throat. They start beating him. They handcuff him. They drag him off to the side. The guy's been run over. And you can see the cop who hit him is kind of saying, oh, well, you know, I hit him. They weren't having any of it. Any of it at all. And you can see from a whole bunch of different angles where this guy got hit. And it turns out he was one of the observers. He was one of the legal observers who's there supposedly to protect the protesters. He's actually a member of the National Lawyers Guild who was there to make sure that, you know, nothing goes wrong. And from what people have been saying, the cops have been doing stuff like that all along. You get somebody in one of these hot rods, oh, we're going to go plow into the crowd. And if they hit somebody or knock somebody over or, you know, bump into somebody, they're hoping that there'll be a reaction. And we see this time and time again, that kind of, hey, you know, if we can just, you know, we can get them to go off, if we can get them to push us, that gives us the excuse to crush it. So I'm telling you, tonight, midnight, 12:01, I'm hoping there are a bunch of folks here in Harrisburg. I am hoping, and my greatest thoughts are that there are no incidents. Now look, they're gonna people who planted. Trust me, the right wing will have troublemakers in the crowd. The right wing will have their videotapers, and they'll have people who are trying to incite folks into saying things. You have to be cognizant of that. So the big question, I don't know if you saw this yesterday. And I got to be honest, you know, the more I think about it, the more if George Soros was actually funding everything that the right claims George Soros is funding, I think George Soros and I would have about the same income. Because, again, you know, George Soros is supposed to be the guy who's funding the Occupy Wall Street. Because evidently he had given some money to this Tides Foundation a couple of years ago. And there's some bizarre connection between Tides and Adbusters, who they claim is anti-capitalist. And I don't know if there's so much anti-capitalist as questioning the media structure and the whole how everything's set up. I don't know if they're anti-capitalist so much as they're anti the current system, which is monopolistic. That's a whole different thing. But, you know, here Soros has claimed he's given a bunch of money. And Soros is saying, I never gave anybody any money. Sorry, didn't happen. And there's a bunch of reasons why I don't think it's possible. One, I think Soros gives money to people who have a plan and actually have some organization and have you know, goals and like a business plan. What's going on in Occupy Wall Street, it's really at the beginning stages. Maybe once they come up with something, maybe then Soros will, but not right now. No connection whatsoever, which I find is funny because when Reuters came out and said, oh, well, you know, there's this guy, Soros is doing it, not happening. And the reality is, as you look at this, and I think Reuters has been fairly well mocked because there's absolutely no evidence other than what Rush Limbaugh said. So I don't know, and I like Reuters. I don't know if Reuters is going to be in the habit of taking news right from Limbaugh or other right-wing talking heads, but you kind of got to wonder. And I love their excuse. They came out and they said, oh, well, you know, there was a technical glitch. Oh, it was an editor's error. You know, we weren't sure if we were going to run the story. There was every explanation except the one that says we screwed up. You know, blame. I'm sorry. What I would love to see, because if you remember going back to the Tea Party thing, you never heard the name the Koch brothers. You never heard of the Richard Mellon Scapes. You never heard of the Olin Foundation. You never heard of the Chorus people. You never heard of the DeVosses. You never heard of any of the right-wing money that's going into pushing all of these anti-government, pro-privatization things. You never heard any of that, did you? Nothing. But now that this occupation thing is taken hold, they got to blame somebody because they can't say it's the unions because, one, the unions don't have that much money, and, two, they're really not in charge of this. Nobody really is. So you got to have this character in the dark, and Soros fills that. And maybe that's what they need. Anyway, I want to make sure I get to this tomorrow, Saturday, October 15th, a global day of action It's a solid day of solidarity with the folks at Occupy Wall Street and all the Occupies across the country. The website that you go to find out where things are at, OccupyTogether.org. Then I'm sure there's a website there you can watch, participate. But more importantly, come down here into Harrisburg to the Occupy Harrisburg and participate with what's going on here. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Liz Rose, Communication Director for the Campaign for America's Future. It is Our Future Friday. Back after this.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. So Congress won't pass a jobs bill to put us back to work, but did pass three global trade deals that the government's own studies show will add to our trade deficit, thereby costing us more jobs. That's exactly what happened. Protesters spoke out against the trade deals as the Senate was passing them. As they were being arrested and escorted out, the protesters reminded the senators that in Colombia, they're killing union people.
Killing labor leaders.
The hearing will come to order. Comments from the audience are inappropriate. There's a time and place for everything. There's a time for demonstrations. There's a time for statements. And there's a time.
They kill labor leaders. Keep the jobs.
Global Trade Watch's Todd Tucker says these trade deals are terrible for working people and will cost more U.S. jobs.
All three of these trade agreements are projected to increase the deficit, projected to increase job losses, and are going to give corporations a whole host of powers to be able to challenge government regulations that they don't like. This is really going to be an economic disaster for American workers.
Workers in the midst of contract negotiations are receiving more support than normal in the streets of New York and D.C. Jesse Russell reports.
One unexpected result of the Occupy Wall Street movement is a larger audience for workers in and around Wall Street seeking to have their grievances heard. Nearly 1,000 office cleaners and security officers from buildings in the area marched on Wall Street Wednesday demanding better paying jobs. Meanwhile, similar action was taking place in Washington, D.C., where there's an Occupy D.C. rally. In advance of an office cleaner march on K Street, the 13 members of the D.C. Council unanimously pledged support for those workers. The workers are in the middle of a contract negotiation, and the expiration date for that contract is this coming Monday. They're represented by the Service Employees International Union, and negotiations are currently held up over wages and health benefits. If an agreement isn't reached by Monday, the workers will most likely be putting down their cleaning tools and walking out of the offices Tuesday morning.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part by the United Steelworkers and by the United Mine Workers of America. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Like things are kind of upside down. Show you someone to turn around.
Train, Mr. 999. And, you know, widely debunked. virtually everybody who talks about the Herman Cain 999 plan said it is an absolute disaster. But you know what? Hey, you cannot break a good frame. You can't. And it's a good sales pitch, and it's a good marketing ploy. Maybe they'll sell. Who knows? Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. So students in Italy, they stormed the Goldman Sachs offices in Milan. And again, you know, this kind of stuff's going on all over the country, all over the world. Tomorrow, again, the Day of Solidarity. I'm looking forward to what's going on here in Harrisburg, and tomorrow should be very interesting. Anyway, I've invited Liz Rose, Communications Director for the Campaign for America's Future. Ourfuture.org is their website, to come talk to us about It's Our Future Friday. Liz, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
You know, I look at this occupation movement going on across not only the country, but across the globe. And it comes down to the fact that for too long now, those folks at the top have done too well, and the folks at the bottom, well, we haven't.
I think you really hit the nail on the head. And I know, you know, I just personally have been extremely inspired by Occupy Wall Street. I think it's great to see people. You know, I've been wondering why Americans haven't been rioting in the streets for years, you know, whether it's the education system or
unemployment, all of it.
Yeah, the unfairness of our tax system. And I think it's terrific. And, you know, it's great.
You know, all of this could be solved by a rational jobs plan, putting people back to work. Because, you know, when we were down in Philadelphia and when we've gone to other events, people want to work. They want to have the opportunities that their parents and grandparents have had. They want to be able to get out from under the burdensome student loans. They just want the American dream like everybody else.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there is great dignity in work. Americans are hardworking people. We want to work hard. And then when we work hard, we want decent pay, you know, health benefits, and a secure retirement. But, I mean, I think there is this myth, you know, we are hard workers and we want a chance to work. And I think, you know, I hope this Occupy Wall Street is going to dovetail with people asking for jobs, saying, look, all I want is a job, because I think that is the key to America's future.
Absolutely. And the reality is, and you guys just had your big conference, the Take Back the American Dream conference, where I think it was, in my opinion, and I've been to the last several, probably the best attended of at least the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it was. It's interesting because, you know, this is basically progressive groups from around the country and progressive individuals coming to Washington to sort of share strategies, put our heads together, you know, be inspired by each other. And I think, to some extent, it was the Occupy Wall Street, you know, that was just getting started, and I think people were really excited by it. I also think there's been, on the progressive side, people have been frustrated with President Obama, but he did his big job speech right before the conference, and I think that people really were getting more and more excited about the president getting out there and fighting for this jobs bill. And obviously it didn't succeed in the Senate, but that really energized people at the conference.
Yeah, here's the problem, though. I mean, everybody's got a jobs plan right now. The problem is the two parties are so far apart when it comes to how to help those of us at the bottom who need it. When they want to help Wall Street, when they want to help big corporations, as we saw with the trade votes, boy, they're all on the same page. 83 senators voted in favor of the South Korean Free Trade Agreement. And, you know, we can't get a jobs bill out of them?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we really need to do is work hard at convincing the American people what creates jobs. You know, here's a few things we know. We know that when you fire cops and teachers and firefighters, you're not creating jobs, right? I mean, there's a lot of confusion in the public about how our jobs created. Is it the private sector? Is it the public sector? What causes big corporations to hoard their cash like they're doing now instead of going out and hiring people? And I think there's no, you know, we think on the progressive side, we think we know what to do. You know, we'd love to see a WPA. We'd love to see a big jobs program. We'd love to see anybody who's willing to work get a job. But I think that there's a lot of confusion, and we as progressives need to work hard and sell our solutions, because what's happening now is that the American public is confused, and we need to push for a jobs plan honestly, like President Obama's, but really even bigger than President Obama's.
Oh, absolutely, much bigger. I mean, because there are so many things that we need to be doing. I had a friend tell me he flew into Beijing, and he said, you get into the airport, and it is a monstrous airport. It is state-of-the-art. You have internet access. The second you get off the plane, you can jump onto a train. You can get to Shanghai on a train that does in excess of 100 miles an hour. Everything is 21st century that they're building.
Yeah,
we're still stuck in the dark ages.
Absolutely, and you were talking about Korea. You know, South Korea is the same way. The internet in South Korea is much cheaper, both for businesses and for individuals, than our internet prices here. You know, if you have to hook up to cable or you hook up to the phone company, it's cheaper, it's faster. Why? Because the government, you know, both in research and development side and then in investments, they make sure that there's a lot of room for competition in Korea.
Oh, but you hear the righties, you keep that government out of my internet.
Yeah. Yeah, except that they would like the phone companies to get all the subsidies, right, instead of the consumers.
I mean, but the thing is it was the government who funded the thing in the first place.
Right, and that's a really good example of a proper role for government. I mean, the private industry did not invent the internet. The internet came from the government. It was a government program.
I mean, and I think you're right on a certain level that people need to have that little bit of education on how exactly an economy works. And I think this conversation that we're having with all of the occupations around the country, I think it's beginning to have those conversations. It's an opportunity for people to say, hey, why are they there? And open the door to talking about income inequality, talking about the fact that, you know, 1% of the people in this country own 40% of the wealth. 1% of the people in this country own over half of all stocks and bonds. Those are conversations that need to be had.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem is that everything is so complicated, you know, whether it is trade or taxes. You mentioned Herman Cain, who's surging in the Republican polls, right? And
Black walnut.
Right. His program, you know, what he calls a big tax cut would actually increase taxes on most Americans. But, you know, the problem is this stuff gets so complicated, and we all have such short attention spans. And I think we really need to challenge ourselves. You know, we can't just go with something simple that sounds good, like 999, you know. And I think the Occupy Wall Street people are really, they're exciting because they're out in the streets. They're exciting because they're doing something new. And I hope the next step is figuring out how we can translate that into action.
Absolutely, and you sustain this conversation so that it isn't something that we go, oh, gee, what was that? Oh, I forgot. I'm hoping that it's the sustainability. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Liz Rose, Communications Director for the Campaign for America's Future. OurFuture.org is the website. I got to be honest, I'm a little encouraged. There's a part of me that's kind of encouraged by the vote on the currency oversight bill that was passed.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of hope because I think when you're talking about debt, you're talking about deficits, you're talking about jobs. I don't think you can leave China out of the discussion and how badly they're eating our lunch.
Right. I mean, you know, and the funny thing about this is if you look at polling of both Democrats and Republicans, the American people are sick of having everything made in China. They are across the board. And this is actually something, you know, low-income people, high-income people, Democrats, Republicans, we all agree. So we just need to start pressuring politicians because the American public is there.
Yeah, I mean, you cannot possibly have a first-world country when you're competing and losing against, you know, a developing nation who's cheating. And they're cheating in not just their currency, but also in mass subsidies, and they're using our money to do it. And that's what's driving me nuts.
Yeah, it is absolutely insane. And, you know, again, it's complicated, but basically we need to change the currency system in China so that it's a more even playing field for our stuff. And I also think Americans do need to start looking again. You know, it used to be saying buy American was almost out of fashion. But, you know, I am to the point where I really would rather buy something that's made here, that's made well, that employs people here. And, I really think we need to pressure politicians both for the China currency stuff, but also for, you know, if the government's going to buy something,
absolutely,
there should be provisions where, if at all possible, it is made here.
I mean, you look at California. They're doing some building. They're doing some bridge work, and they're building roads and bridges over there. And they're using steel from China,
yeah.
And they're actually bringing in some Chinese engineers to put it together.
Right. And, I mean, I know that it's going to be a global economy, and I'm not trying to put that back in a bottle. Like, you know, we all know there's going to be a global economy. At the same time, you know, honestly, we can employ people here. Why in the world would we employ Chinese people? It just does not make any sense.
Well, that's what bothers me about the stimulus bill, and one of the things that one of my biggest concerns by not having the Buy American provision. Yeah, we put money back in consumers' pockets. Consumers went out and they bought more products, but those products were made in China. Whose economy did we stimulate?
Right, and I know that I'm to the point where, you know, most of the stuff that is made in China that I buy seems to be junk.
It is
junk. So wouldn't you rather, honestly, I would rather pay a little more and get something high quality that's going to last. And I really feel like as consumers, we need to push for that. Like, I am tired of stuff that's going to break. I want something that's going to last. I want it to be made here, and I'm going to start asking for it.
Yeah, but I don't think most Americans think that way. We go to the shelf, and I know my pocket's a little light because times are tough. The kids need new shoes. The rent's due. I got to get this, and I got to get the cheapest one, even if, as you've said, it isn't going to last. It's that short term. I need it now, and I don't have the money.
Well, and listen, you know, we all like a bargain, right? I get that, but I think it's something we need to challenge ourselves on. You know, the cheapest food isn't necessarily best. The cheapest shoes aren't necessarily best. And I do think it's something we need to start working, you know, both in schools, with kids, with our own families, and spreading the word that, you know, you got to think about, where do you get your stuff?
Yep.
Who makes it? Yep. That, you know, it matters.
Absolutely. And I hope more people start thinking that way. And I'm looking forward to tonight's event, Occupy Harrisburg, beginning at 12:01 this evening. And I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
You guys are wild in Pennsylvania. I mean, that's late, man. You know, in D.C., we're sleeping at 12:01.
Yeah, I wasn't there for the vote, but that's that's the group.
Obviously, a lot of kids are participating, which is really exciting.
And I'm thrilled about having people activated, engaged, and trying to inform themselves and getting out. And I think this is going to be a great event. Liz Rose, I appreciate your time. Always great to talk with you. You guys do great work over at the Campaign for America's Future. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you.
All righty. Liz Rose, the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org, the website. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Well, gosh, look at this. The Republican Party does have a presidential candidate who's not a far-right goofball, a product of Wall Street banksters, a tripped-out cokehead, or a yee-hawing BSer from Texas. Because of what this contender is not, and of what he is, you've probably never heard of him, and chances are quite good that he'll not be the GOP nominee. But Buddy Romer should be listened to and ought to be the nominee of some party because he's making a heap of sense. Not only is he daring to speak truth to power, but truth about power. The central issue, says this former member of Congress and former Republican governor of Louisiana, is, quote, the corruptive power of big money in campaigns. It's about the big checks and special interests, and it's Democrat and Republican. The political and media establishment have responded to such rare honesty and blunt talk with blanket coverage of Romer's campaign, by which I mean they've thrown a heavy blanket over him, hoping he'll neither be seen nor heard by voters who might actually like what he's saying. He's not been allowed in any of the GOP's presidential debates, for example, even though his 1-2% showing in the polls is slightly better than that of John Huntsman, who has been consecrated as a serious candidate by the political cognoscenti. Here's a little sampler of Romer's ideas. I would have a rule that lobbyists could not give a check to a candidate, that PACs could give no more than individuals, that there'd be no super PACs, and, he adds, I would have a rule that there would be criminal penalties for violation of these rules. This is Jim Hightower saying, this guy might actually be the people's buddy. Wouldn't you like to see Rick, Mitt, Michelle, and the rest have to deal with him in debates? To learn more, Go to www.buddyromer.com. That's Buddy Romer, R-O-E-M-E-R.com.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast. If you got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and you can take the program on the go with you. So now you've got three of the four largest banks in the country going after and fleecing their customers. They want that money for the debit cards, and now you've got Vermont Democrat Peter Welch saying, you know what, Attorney General Holder, you need to be looking into this. This sounds like collusion, and it sounds like it violates antitrust laws. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. Also, down in Florida, somebody got the right idea, Florida Community Bank. They're now offering their customers $5 a month to open up a checking account. So if you're in Florida, Florida's Community Bank now paying their people to have checking accounts if you open one now from one of the other places, and good for them. We got to do something to get away from these big banksters. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Got Ike on the line. How you doing tonight, Ike?
Yeah, all right, Rick. You know, it's been a minute since I talked to you.
How you been?
Oh, dude, I don't know. You know, I mean, yeah, I went through my little cancer thing, got out of that, and now I'm out working. And you know, hey, welcome to South Carolina. I've worked for 4 weeks, and I ain't got paid. And you know, I keep working so I can make enough money for the guy, so maybe he'll pay me. And you know, hey, welcome to the right to the work state. You know. And you know, just for you folks up there in Pennsylvania, you know, listen, you know, I understand, you know, yeah, Harrisburg, you're going to file, you know, bankruptcy. All right. Well, guess what? You know, Citibank and the rest of them, they pretty much done that, and they got bailed out. You know, businesses and, you know, the big boys, they get bailed out. But
absolutely.
You know, people like me, when I don't get paid, guess what? I got no court to go to. I got nothing. I get screwed.
You can go to a court, but good luck getting a lawyer to take the case.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's what Occupy Wall Street's about. We're going to have a rally down here in Charleston on the 19th.
Good for you.
At Brittle Bank Park, and I can promise you I'll be there. You know, look, dude, I just want to tell you something, you know, straight up. You know, Lech Walesa's in this. You know, we need more big boys to step to the plate. We need union money. We need Hollywood stars. We need the people that carry SAG cards. We need the people that benefit from the unions to step to the plate and back this up.
I don't think many people know who Lech is. You want to tell everybody who he is?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, a lot of people don't know. But you know, you can credit Ronald Reagan for crumbling communism. But I got news for you. You need to go Google the Gdansk shipyard. And Lech Walesa, you know, to the point that, by the way, that was American Union money that went into that shipyard in Poland.
That's the one bit of credit I do give Lane Kirkland.
Yeah, that started the movement to start with. That was American money. American unions put their juice behind that.
Yep.
And that's what still burns me up, that, you know what, if you're a union member and you're paying your dues, then you should demand and expect that your unions are not only fighting legally in the courts to return the power back to your work to the workforce and to protect your pensions and protect your jobs, but you know what? They ought to be putting money out there on the street to support these people in New York and Atlanta and everywhere else, because I'm telling you, you know, I've been begging this for a long time, brother.
Me too.
I've been warning people this was going to come, and I'll be honest with you, it's been nonviolent to this point. And I'm a little bit more radical than that.
Yeah, but don't
what I'm saying here.
Don't give them an excuse.
Well, no, no, no. And, well, you got agent provocateurs in there the same way you had them in the 60s.
Yep.
And, you know, they're going to try to make them look bad and et cetera. But we need some front people that can, when the mic and the camera's thrown in front of them, they can be succinct and to the point. And here's the point. Look, this class warfare has been going on since the days of Ronald Reagan. You promised us once you gave them amnesty, you were going to stop it. You didn't. On top of that, you guys are the ones that as soon as you got power in Ohio, Wisconsin, and these other places, Pennsylvania, etc., what'd you do? You came after our retirement. You came after our jobs. Okay? You've done everything you can to beat us down. Well, guess what? You know what? Dig it up. It's on the record. It's called Nothing Left to Lose. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
If freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose, you guys ain't got nothing to stand on, because I got news for you. We will show it at your house. We will bring it. And, you know, you can fight all you want, but you're going to wind up like Marie Antoinette, for God's sake.
Well, let's hope it doesn't get to that, because
they've been killing me the whole time, Rick.
True.
They've been killing me. 30 years I've been in painting, in construction. What did they do to me? I watched them do it to me. I got out of steel. I got out of manufacturing cars. They sent my job overseas. So I said, well, you can't send your house out of the country to get it painted. I got a guaranteed job. Well, guess what? No, they flooded the damn market with cheap labor, and they burned me up.
And that comes back down to our trade policies.
They found every way they can to cut my knees out from underneath me. And this movement right now is straight up. Here's the deal. We're done with it. You guys ain't cutting us no more. And by God, it's time. You want to cut our knees out? Now we're coming for your knees. And if you don't like that, you know what? You better change your way. And I will be at Brittle Bank Park in Charleston, South Carolina on the 19th. And by God, if I had the money and I wasn't in the shape I'm in, I'll tell you right now, I'd be in New York. I'd be at the front of the line. I'd be at the front of the line.
Well, keep us informed.
Rick,
I love you, brother.
I love you.
Thank you. Let us know what goes on down there. Please keep us informed. Keep us up to date. I want to know what's going on down in Charleston.
And everybody that's listening and all your people out there, get up. Let's do it. It's time. It's past time. Quit being a little sheep about it. Let's jump up here. You know, screw the Tea Party. They're Koch brothers founded. We're real. We're the men. We're the women. We work hard. And, by God, we got a good, strong America here. It's ours. It belongs to us.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, brother. Let me know. Keep us up to date.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you. Hey, look, you know, this stuff's going on all across the country, and we're seeing more and more groups taking to the streets, you know, like we've been talking about for some time. I've been saying for the longest time what has to happen is people have to come out of the shadows. And I've been saying that about unemployment. Why aren't we seeing the unemployed out in the streets? Why aren't we seeing the underemployed, the uninsured? Why aren't we seeing their faces? Well, now you're seeing a couple of them.
Boy, Ike articulated what millions of Americans think. He did it very, very well. You know, it's a shame that maybe we couldn't get Ike a job as a recruiter for this organization. Man, I'll tell you what. When you listen to that man, you can't help but be moved, because he's exactly what this movement is about. And if anything, he's worse than the average American being hurt by this whole horrible situation.
And, you know, this whole thing could be solved with sane, rational policy. And I looked at the news, the Journal of Commerce today, that said that the overall trade deficit, it fell. The trade deficit fell. You know how much it fell by? Well, it went from $45.63 down to $45.61. Very, very small, but something to cheer about. Here's the problem, though. The deficit with China, up over 7%. So we have seen a massive increase in the trade deficit with China. And, you know, the thing is they're saying, well, you know, the reason for this is because, well, the reason it all came down is people are buying fewer cars, less clothing, there are fewer TVs, less furniture, all that stuff. And you go, well, of course they're buying less stuff. They're broke. And, you know, the thing is what's bothering me, do you know what our trade deficit this year, to this point this year is? $564.3 billion. That means we have purchased $64 billion worth of stuff from someone else. So we've sent all that money overseas. They're holding that money. What are they buying? Evidently, they're not buying our products because we've got a $564.3 billion trade deficit. So what are they? Where is that money going? Where is that $564.3 billion going? It's buying us. It's buying our companies. It's buying our properties. It's buying our politicians. The Chinese are spending millions of dollars lobbying Congress against the Chinese oversight, currency oversight bill. Explain that to me, because I'm just not getting it. I'm just not getting it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this trade deficit, because some people are saying, hey, it's great to have a trade deficit. Things will be wonderful if we could just make that trade deficit bigger. Also going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen.
They blame, with some justification, the problems in the financial sector for getting us into this mess. And they're dissatisfied with the policy response here in Washington. And at some level, I can't blame them. Certainly, 9% unemployment and very slow growth is not a very good situation.
You know, one of the guys that, you know, part of the whole reason we're in this mess, saying, gee, you know, I can see it. Yeah, Ben Bernanke. Yeah, Goldman guy. Yeah, well, you know, I can see it. But here we are, $29 billion trade deficit in the month of August with just China. Are you kidding me? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let's go to Stosh on line two. How are we doing tonight, Stosh?
All right, Rick. You mentioned something. You said something a couple of days ago about a national day of pulling the money out of the big banks. You said there was three banks that were going after debt cards.
Yeah, three of the big four. I know. I think it was. Bank of America, Chase, and Citigroup. I think those were the three of the big four. But yeah, November 5th is Bank Transfer Day. They're asking people to pull their money out of the big banks and put it into credit unions. Also, November 12th is another Bankster Day of Action, and people are being asked to close all their accounts with the big banks. and move to one that isn't considered too big to fail, like credit unions. And I'm a big fan of credit unions. You know, one of our advertisers, PSECU, is where I have been doing my banking for probably 15 years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been dealing with Members First and also Wells Fargo. But
oh, Wells Fargo. Oh.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought they might be one of the ones who are going to up the debit card, whatever they're trying to do. So, is there a big campaign, a national campaign of people talking to these people that are holding up, sitting up Wall Street and all around the country?
Yeah,
are
I mean,
they getting the message to pour money out of the big banks too?
I think there's some conversation going on there. I don't know that, there's a major organizing campaign going there, but I'm sure it's things that they're talking about. Look, they're talking about the big picture stuff, the income inequality, the fact that we bailed out banks and not homeowners, and we bailed out the investor class, but not the poverty class. Those are things, and I encourage you, if you could make it down here to Harrisburg, to the Capitol steps, bring as many people down as possible. The bigger this event is, the better it's going to be. It's on 3rd Street here in Harrisburg, right at the Capitol steps, right at the intersection of 3rd and State. And I'm sure there are going to be hundreds of people there, so you'll
see. That's right, you're saying.
Tonight, right after the show, when we sign off here, we're walking down the street, and that's where we're heading.
I'll be there.
All right, Stosh. So, I look forward to it, brother.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
Anything else on your mind?
No, I was just trying to think of a campaign to get in contact with the people who are holding up, you know, Wall Street and all around the country, for them to, you know, really tie into this, pull your money out of the banks, pull your money out of Wall Street, and see, I bet they start squirming.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is the folks there on Wall Street probably, the people who are occupying it probably don't have an awful lot of money to be putting. This campaign is for people like you and me. People who maybe have a couple of bucks in a bank, a checking account, a couple of bucks in a savings account. They're saying, you know what, pull that money out of there, take it to a credit union, take it to a bank that's not one of the big problems.
They have parents and grandparents.
Yep.
Talk to them. They say, look, you might not want to come down here and sit out with us, but you can pull your money out as a way of showing your support.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Appreciate the call, Stosh. I look forward to seeing you tonight.
All right.
All righty.
Thanks, Rick.
So you look at this trade deficit. And again, I go back to this because $564.3 billion trade deficit. That's how much we've purchased from other countries that they haven't purchased from us. Had we balanced trade, had they purchased from us and we purchased from them, which is what I'm in favor of, there's got to be a mechanism that's going to level that out to where trade benefits everyone and doesn't kill someone. The problem is the U.S. has been the economy of last resort, the American consumer, the consumer of last resort. The Chinese dumped their products here, subsidized not only by the Chinese government, but also by the American consumer, because we're sending them all this money. And now they got billions and billions of cash just sitting there waiting. What are they going to do with it? Well, they're going to entice American companies to come on over. We'll give you some of that cash back, and you can take it back over there and use it for whatever you want. You know, divvying out amongst your shareholders. So you got this newspaper, BusinessInsider.com, who has this great idea. And I'm just going to read the little piece. The headline is from Business Insider: everyone interprets the trade deficit 100% wrong. They write, as part of this morning's trade balance report, the July trade deficit was revised wider from $44.8 billion to $45.6 billion. Since the trade deficit is subtracted from GDP, this is seen as a negative, according to them. He said zero hedge experts coming down and revised third quarter GDP estimates. That may be possible, but it misses the big picture. Now, they're claiming that wide trade deficits are a sign of more robust growth. So their argument is that the bigger our trade deficit, the more growth we have. And it's so nice that they have it on this chart, and it's a beautiful little chart. And I look at this and I go, the big picture, and I'm not sure they get the big picture. Someone really needs to sit down with these folks over at Business Insider and explain to them what debt and trade deficits really do. It destroys this country. It destroys the jobs here. You know, but beyond that, the problem is we're buying way too much stuff from overseas. We need to be producing things. It's a major problem with this country, and it should be something that we look at as a national security problem. You know, you look at that stimulus bill, and I said this earlier. The stimulus bill should have been targeted to more U.S.-made products. So you're not stimulating everybody else's economy and leaving yours at peril. And I look at clothing, for instance. People over at NPR said 90% of all clothing, shoes, shirts, hats, all of it, made out of the country. You know, you cannot possibly have an economy where a good portion of your of the things you consume, you don't make. And I listened to Hillary Clinton. You know, she's saying, look, we have to position ourselves to lead in a world where security is shaped in boardrooms and on trading floors, as well as battlefields. She was talking to people at the Economic Club of New York. And she's saying, look, at the end of this, we need to start thinking like the BRIC countries. Our economy has to be part of our national security. We've got to stop this culture of political brinksmanship where the Republicans are taking us to the edge of disaster for every appropriations bill, for everything, the FAA bill, you name it. They're taking us right to the edge of disaster. She's saying that's got to stop. We've got to stop looking like idiots around the world. And she says, you know, you've got to go out there and you've got to use foreign policy to strengthen our economy because that's what other people are doing. That's what India, that's what Brazil's doing, that's what China, Russia, that's what they're all doing. We're not. We're the dumb ones. And I go back to Paul Craig Roberts who said, you know, we're the only country in the world who gives away our wealth for nebulous foreign policy aims. We want to be nice. Colombia is the absolute perfect example. We should have a free trade agreement with them because, you know, they're sticking their thumb in Venezuela's eye and they, you know, they've been good. So let's whip some trade on them. Let's give them some jobs. Let's give them some industry. This way, you know, maybe they'll be our friends. That is how we deal with trade and foreign policy. It's insane. And she's saying, look, you know, we've got to stop that. We've got to go after people who put up borders. We've got to go after people who are not reciprocating. And it's got to be aggressive. You know, China beating us up? Well, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say that China is beating us up. We're letting China beat us up. We've handcuffed ourselves to our feet. And then we're surprised when the Chinese kick us in the behind. And we're doing nothing to stop that. And you look at these more trade agreements doing the exact same thing. Now, look, I'm not anti-trade. But I am anti getting my hat handed to me and not being able to put up any type of defense. And I hear people say, well, you're talking about protectionism, you're isolationism. I'm going to protect myself, absolutely. And we should as a nation. You know, I love these chest thumpers who, well, we're America, we're number one, we need to have this big military. Yes, but we also need to have the economic might to sustain. If we're going to blow things up, if we're going to have a military that bombs everywhere, we should make our bombs and the clothing that our soldiers wear. What's amazing to me is you look at these soldiers who go into battle wearing clothes where the fabric was made in Mexico. You know, granted, it was cut and it was sewed and it was all put together here, but the fabric's from Mexico. You know those cute little pins with the army insignia and all that? Made in China. You know, my wife, the big scrapbooker, the insane scrapbooker. We go to A.C. Moore or Michaels or one of those places that have the scrapbooks with the military insignias on them. You know, proud to be Navy, proud to be Marine. They're made in China. And there's got to be a better way than that. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Yana Kanukov. About the surveillance state and all of the videotaping and all of the, well, all of the surveillance that's going on. We're right back after this. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the worker. War on the worker.
War on the worker. Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's working-class majority.
Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. So Congress won't pass a jobs bill to put us back to work, but did pass three global trade deals that the government's own studies show will add to our trade deficit, thereby costing us more jobs. That's exactly what happened. Protesters spoke out against the trade deals as the Senate was passing them. As they were being arrested and escorted out, the protesters reminded the senators that in Colombia, they're killing union people.
Killing labor leaders.
Hearing will come to order. Comments from the audience are inappropriate. There's a time and place for everything. There's a time for demonstrations. There's a time for statements. And there's a time.
They kill labor leaders. Keep the jobs short.
Global Trade Watch's Todd Tucker says these trade deals are terrible for working people and will cost more U.S. jobs.
All three of these trade agreements are projected to increase the deficit, projected to increase job losses, and are going to give corporations a whole host of powers to be able to challenge government regulations that they don't like. This is really going to be an economic disaster for American workers.
Workers in the midst of contract negotiations are receiving more support than normal in the streets of New York and D.C. Jesse Russell reports.
One unexpected result of the Occupy Wall Street movement is a larger audience for workers in and around Wall Street seeking to have their grievances heard. Nearly 1,000 office cleaners and security officers from buildings in the area marched on Wall Street Wednesday demanding better paying jobs. Meanwhile, similar action was taking place in Washington, D.C., where there's an Occupy D.C. rally. In advance of an office cleaner march on K Street, the 13 members of the D.C. Council unanimously pledged support for those workers. The workers are in the middle of a contract negotiation, and the expiration date for that contract is this coming Monday. They're represented by the Service Employees International Union, and negotiations are currently held up over wages and health benefits. If an agreement isn't reached by Monday, the workers will most likely be putting down their cleaning tools and walking out of the offices Tuesday morning.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part by the United Steelworkers and by the United Mine Workers of America. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
When we were down in Occupy Philadelphia, I was surprised at the number of people who were shocked that they were being watched. The number of folks who were on the streets going, "Did you know the police are videotaping us?" Yeah, not only are the police videotaping with that camera and that camera, there are two cameras up on the poles that are recording you, and probably one in the building and probably one in the two helicopters above us. And it kind of makes these people were kind of shocked. I can't believe that they're watching. Of course they're watching you. And what's even more surprising are the young people were the ones who didn't realize it. They're pretty much the ones who I think have kind of given up on privacy. When you look at Facebook and Foursquare and all the social media sites that say where and when you are. Surprising stuff. That's why I've asked Yana Kunichov. She is the one of the people over at surveillanceinthehomeland.org, doing an awful lot of research and writing over there. Yana, thanks for taking time for me.
Great to speak to you.
You know, I look at these cameras almost everywhere, and it's, you know, here in the state of Pennsylvania, you've got the legislature wanting to put cameras on every red light so that we can catch speeders, and they want to put cameras on every street corner where there might be trouble. Are we turning into camera nation?
I think that what Truthout.org's Project Surveillance in the Homeland found was that what people are talking about in terms of cameras that we're putting out, the cameras that are being put out, is actually only the tip of the icebergs in terms of the surveillance that we don't even know about. So I think that that's a really good question, and I think that the answer might be that we're definitely getting there.
You know, I heard the other day, and I think it was Ron Wyden, who was one of the folks saying, well, you know, we should put out the real Patriot Act, the Patriot Act that most people don't even know it exists, so people can find out, kind of like you're saying, what's really going on and what kind of surveillance is really going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and that's exactly what we hoped this project would do, give people at least understanding of what they should be worried about and what kind of rights they need to be ready to defend that they don't may not have considered, for example, keeping their license plate safe from license plate technology that tracks the number and the location.
You know what, I'm kind of surprised that, you know, people who there was a discussion locally on whether they should put cameras on the street corners, and I was surprised at the number of people who said, yes, put them there, keep me safe. I'm willing to give up my privacy and my personal freedom. Just please keep me safe. And I'm surprised at the number of people who are willing to, for a little bit of security that may or may not happen, willing to give up an awful lot.
I mean, I think that this is just a symptom of how far we've let fears of, you know, this sort of abstract concept of terrorism or, you know, of crime sort of let these other things like surveillance technology sort of run rampant, because I think that's what really keeps people from protesting or find out even about the scale of things.
Yep. And you look at these occupations that are going around, and you do know that everything is being videotaped, everything is being cataloged, and you know, using it, because, you know, these kids may be terrorists. And the other thing that they use cameras for, and I keep hearing people saying, well, we should have cameras all along the border. We should have cameras everywhere to go after those illegals.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the idea of securing the border and how in the last couple of years that's been tied in with the idea of the terrorist threat and completely left, you know, migration and what the economic reasons that migration happens out of the question is a really big issue.
And it's not just the Mexicans coming across the border. It's also those Muslims. We got to keep track of the Muslims. But the reality is most cameras, they're just there as an afterthought. They're not stopping crime. It's just a matter of monitoring what people's movements, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that this project has found out is that there is what we'd consider legitimate law enforcement practices, and then there's sort of the apparatus of the surveillance state, a lot of which hasn't been presented legally at all and may or may not sort of trample all over our constitutional rights.
So how are you finding out any of this stuff?
So actually the project is a joint project between Truthout and also the ACLU of Massachusetts, who has spent the past 10 years sort of sending countless Freedom of Information Act requests to government agencies and compiling a lot of data. So between our reporters, like Jason Leopold, who have been doing a lot of investigative work, and the researchers at the ACLU, we could put together sort of a 10-year retrospective of the issue.
And how much resistance are you getting? Because I can't imagine that these Freedom of Information Act requests are being met with open arms.
No, I mean, I think the fact that it takes, I think for any amount of information, there is resistance. There's a ton of reasons not to give you one document. But I think that the great thing about the Freedom of Information Act is that eventually if you push enough and if you have time and if you have, you know, the time to do the scope of news organizations that it really takes to gather this kind of information to get a full picture, then it is doable.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Yana Kunichoff. She's written a great piece over at truthout.org. We've got a link at our site at therickssmithshow.com. She's also part of this really a great investigative site, surveillanceinthehomeland.org. We've also got that linked at the site as well. You know, as you're talking to people about the things you're finding, do you think that they're surprised, or is it kind of like I thought? Well, of course, I know they're doing this. It's what they do.
I don't think that a lot of people really recognized the scale of the issue, and I think that the license plate technology that we have an infographic about is a great example, because almost without any consideration of who you are, you can have your license plate and where they found it stored indefinitely and shared with any other agencies. And I think that, you know, just something like driving that most people take for granted every day, to know that you could be surveilled while doing that, I think surprises a lot of people.
And, you know, I look at the Real ID Act that they were trying to ram through, and what most people don't understand, they wanted to throw an RFID chip in there. That would have been really a tracking device wherever you go.
And that's also why, like, the information that we've looked at about criminalizing immigrants is so pertinent for everyone, because first you want to have cards for immigrants, and then it goes to the Real ID card for everyone, and, you know, that sort of continues to expand.
You know, because, you know, I go back to the Pastor Niemöller quote, you know, first they came for the communists, and I said nothing, and then they came for the trade unionists, and I said nothing. And I'm looking at this as kind of the same scenario. If folks don't speak up now while they're going after, the illegals and the Muslims, when you get all those in line, who's next?
I think that's exactly the question that we should all be asking ourselves. That's absolutely right.
Because I don't think their appetite ever goes away for power. And this is one of those things that scares me. And I look at New York City, probably in this country, probably the city with the most cameras per square mile anywhere in the country, and probably almost as many as London or some of the places in the EU.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that New York City, and if you also watch the way that NYPD have been responding to the Occupy Wall Street protests, which is also where that movement sort of first took off, I think you can see a blueprint that's very likely to be sort of franchised all over the country. Absolutely.
So what do you say to the person who, and I know there are some of the, you know, the chest thumpers and the people who buy into the, well, we just need to keep America safe. What do you say to them that say, you know, these are keeping our country safe? If we have cameras on the border, it's going to be a deterrent. If we put cameras everywhere, it's going to deter criminals and terrorists and all of those folks.
I think what I would say is that we have had 10 years of the war on terror and sort of the rise of this national security state. And rather than feeling any safer, what we've seen is that there's a lot of poor migrants that are criminalized. There's a lot of people mistakenly taken through extraordinary rendition trips to other countries. I think what we've actually seen is that it hasn't made us safer, but it's given more reasons for a lot of people in weaker positions in society to be criminalized. And I think what you say in terms of, you know, who are they going to come for next is absolutely right.
You know, one of the things that, you know, I've always said is I can keep you safe. I can keep you completely safe from anybody on the outside, but who's going to keep you safe from me? And that's my problem with giving one entity that much power. And you know, you look at what's going on in New York and across the country, people are protesting, really the top 1%. And I look at all these cameras, and there's part of me, the conspiratorial part of me says, who are we really protecting? Are we protecting me, you, or are we protecting the investor class and the folks, our modern day kings and queens?
Right. And I think that the best way to break that system is not only to honestly dissent and to use the right to dissent, but also when you have 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people, you know, in Chicago, for example, where I am protesting, then, you know, it's not reasonable to have surveillance on all of those people. You know, you have to start listening to their demands for what they want changed in society.
In your research and in the investigations that you guys have done, what's been the most egregious thing that you've come up with? I have a friend who said that, you know, anytime you go to a football game, they're scanning everybody's faces because they've got face recognition software. And anytime you're in large crowds, they can pick you out of a crowd if they just have your number. What's the most egregious mm-hmm. thing that you've seen?
I don't know. I think it's really hard to tell. I think what I would say is what's been allowed in terms of to control immigrants and to sort of look for Muslims that we feel are radicalizing, which is that there's, you know, FBI agents that are sent in sort of as provocateurs, or people have their phones tapped and they never know about it. And I think that, you know, again, when it starts with those things, then I think that it could spread to, you know, people who are also just against a certain political policy.
Or grandmothers somewhere having a bake sale and just happen to be part of an anti-war movement. Or a labor movement, or any other, an occupation movement. Last question I've got for you. You know, as we're moving down the road, and this grows and grows and grows, what do people do? How do we stop it? How do we fight back? What are you guys suggesting?
The ACLU actually has a lot of great ideas for ways to both push against certain policy decisions and also stand up for your own rights. For example, putting certain safety precautions on your own internet information. But I think also just to get informed, I think the best way to deal with this is to be able to inform people around you and then to put, you know, to bring that into movements like what happened in Wisconsin, like the labor movement. You know, if you can inform people in the labor movement that this is also another issue and bring those issues together, then I think that makes all of them stronger.
It takes information, and it takes people coming together, which is what we're seeing across the country. Yana Kunichoff, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Again, her piece over at truthout.org. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Yana Kunichoff's name. It'll take you right there. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Are you surprised they're watching? I'm not. Back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Well, gosh, look at this. The Republican Party does have a presidential candidate who's not a far-right goofball, a product of Wall Street banksters, a tripped-out cokehead, or a yee-hawing BSer from Texas. Because of what this contender is not, and of what he is, you've probably never heard of him. And chances are quite good that he'll not be the GOP nominee. But Buddy Romer should be listened to and ought to be the nominee of some party because he's making a heap of sense. Not only is he daring to speak truth to power, but truth about power. The central issue, says this former member of Congress and former Republican governor of Louisiana, is, quote, the corrupted power of big money in campaigns. It's about the big checks and special interests, and it's Democrat and Republican. The political and media establishment have responded to such rare honesty and blunt talk with blanket coverage of Romer's campaign, by which I mean they've thrown a heavy blanket over him, hoping he'll neither be seen nor heard by voters who might actually like what he's saying. He's not been allowed in any of the GOP's presidential debates, for example, even though his 1-2% showing in the polls is slightly better than that of John Huntsman, who has been consecrated as a serious candidate by the political cognoscenti. Here's a little sampler of Romer's ideas. I would have a rule that lobbyists could not give a check to a candidate, that PACs could give no more than individuals, that there'd be no super PACs, and, he adds, I would have a rule that there would be criminal penalties for violation of these rules. This is Jim Hightower saying, this guy might actually be the people's buddy. Wouldn't you like to see Rick, Mitt, Michelle, and the rest have to deal with him in debates? To learn more, go to www.buddyromer.com. That's buddyromer, R-O-E-M-E-R.com.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there from the website. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. You can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. So as we've been seeing since this whole Occupy thing has been going on, we've been seeing the mockery, the right-wing mouthpieces, people like Beck and Lintball, just trying to mock these people who have said enough already. We're going to stand up for our rights, we're going to fight back, and we're going to take it to the streets. So you've seen this going on and on and on, and I guess you would expect that. You know, the more you sit and you look at the people like Beck and Lintball and all of the right-wing mouthpieces, you would expect them to be the cheerleaders of the status quo, the cheerleaders of the current system that really has enriched the few, because look, you know, the Becks, the Limbaughs, and the Hannitys, they are in the 1%. They are the invest. They are the wealthy, and it's amazing to me. And you expect them to be the microphone. You expect them to be the megaphone for the mega rich. You do. What really has caught my attention, though, is there's this, I don't even know what he is. He runs a website, and he started this thing, you know, I am the 53%, because the movement is saying, oh, we're the 99. We're the 99%, the people who have been screwed for the last 30 years. While we've created a billionaire class, you know, we're the ones who all of us have gotten the shaft. Well, this guy, you know, paid by the investor class to divide the working class, to divide the rest of us. He is now saying, well, you know, I'm the 53% because he claims they pay tax. They're the ones who pay federal taxes and the 47% don't. So they're trying to mock it a little bit. And, you know, some of the pictures that they put up are pretty hysterical. My favorite one is this first girl who, you know, holds a paper over her face, says, my dad's a broker. He gets 40% of his earnings taken by taxes. Well, the top tax rate's 35% before you do any deductions or anything. So she really doesn't know much about it. She goes, he works hard 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., 10 to 12 at home. So he can afford paying for my sisters and I tuition. She needs to go to school. At a state school, she underlines state school. She says, I'm 18, only work I find is through the tutoring and babysitting, but I don't expect anything to be handed to me. Does anybody get that? She doesn't want anything handed to her. Her father's paying her tuition. And as she writes, you know, I am the 53%. No, you're not, honey. You don't pay any taxes. Stop it. So you go to this next woman who looks really in need of a shower. You want to talk about grungy? You want to talk about dirty hippie? This woman really, really hygiene problem, it appears. She says, I am the 53%, a homemaker that picked the wrong time to seek a job. So you're unemployed? You're not paying taxes? You're not part of the 53%. Stop it. She goes, I shop at stores with coupons. Good for you. You should do that. And she goes, and oh, I want a balanced budget like I do mine. And she says, I stand for free markets and freedom, not handouts. What are you talking about, honey? I'll give you a bar of soap. How's that? Another guy, a former Marine, he says, I'm a former Marine. I work two jobs. I don't have health care. I worked 60 to 70 hours a week for 8 years to pay my way through school. I haven't had four consecutive days off in over 4 years. He says, he doesn't blame Wall Street, so suck it up, whiners. I'm the 53%. Does no one see the problem with this? The guy hasn't had four consecutive days off in 4 years, he said. He works 60, 70 hours. He's got no health care. He works two jobs. He's a former Marine. We can't teach her. We can't treat our former Marines a little better than that. Yet he's proud of the fact, proud of it. This other guy blows my mind. From a poor family who was on welfare. From a poor family who was on welfare. I've been working all my life. No loans, no handouts, no debts, no whining. While I bust my behind putting myself through school and working long hours, the 99% whines and produces nothing. He says, I am not a slave to the system. I do not need for anyone to pay my way. Except when you were a kid. Who, without that welfare, you probably would have starved. Or did you miss that? Did you forget that part of the equation? I know it's easy to forget history, but, you know, kind of one of those things. This other guy, love this one too. I work 60 hours a week on a salary that pays me for 45 hours. What? Are you insane? And you're going to be happy about that. He says, I've worked full time since I was 18, even as a full time college student. After college, worked two jobs to pay down my debt. I began paying for my own health insurance at 21. I am the 53%, he says. Does no one get the point that these kids are in the street for a reason? This nitwit working 60 hours a week, only getting paid for 45 of it? Is that what we want? Does it make any sense to you? And I love this guy. Eric Erickson. Who Glenn Beck just kind of went off as a normal guy. He says, I work three jobs. I have a house I can't sell. My family insurance costs are outrageous, but I don't blame Wall Street. Suck it up, you whiners. I am the 53%. He's got three gigs. Yes, he runs a website that is funded by billionaires. He works for a radio network funded by the ultra wealthy, and he does a CNN gig that pays him pretty well. Oh, my heart just bleeds for you, Eric. Just bleeds for me. Just bleeds. Just absolutely. This other guy, another guy, just beautiful. He comes out and he says, look, you know, I was born in 76. My father died in 83. Doesn't mention if he got Social Security survivor's benefits. I would beg to guess he got Social Security survivor benefits. Doesn't mention that. Pretty easy to forget. He says he went out and joined the military, you know, got out of school. He got an FAA license, he got a job. He was pretty happy about that. Had kids, went on to buy a house, you know, the whole spiel, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then his kid gets sick. And, you know, takes the kid to the school, to the doctor, and, oh, you know, thank goodness for the fact that, you know, through modern medicine, which government invested heavily in, his kid survived. But, you know, he doesn't care. The five of them live in a house that, you know, that's only 1,500 square feet. He says, I stay where I can afford, and I'm debt-free. I have no debts. I've paid off my car. I've paid off everything. Well, I'm complete zero debt, well, except for mortgage, as if that's not debt. But... again, total disconnect. And what's frustrating to me is these are the very people who I think the 99% are fighting for. These people who call themselves the 53ers. They're struggling, man. In this country, the richest country in the world, there shouldn't be that kind of struggle. Look, I work as hard as anybody. And have my entire life as well. And I've been pretty fortunate. And I don't want to see my kids have to struggle the way I did. And I don't think parents want to see their children either. And I look at these people who, you know, they're going to puff out their chest and say how wonderful they are and how much they did and how they accomplished. And they're telling you, man, I'm struggling. I'm having a hard time making ends meet. I'm working 2-3 jobs. I don't have health insurance. Why do you think these people are in the streets? I mean, it's amazing. And then you see the whole other list of photos and these 53 things where people are saying, you know, my grandparents or parents came here and they had nothing. And look at me now. What's that got to do with you? You know, they came here, they worked hard, and they were able to succeed and do better. These kids are in the streets because... it looks like that is being taken away. There are no jobs out there. And a couple of the posts that I did like, this one, and it's kind of long, but I want to read through it because I think it's the crux of the whole thing. He says, I'm a college graduate. I have a BA and an MA. I pay for all my living expenses by working close to 50 hours a week at a lower middle class salary to support my family. He said, I already have paid off my college loans. I accomplished this through a combination of savings and work through school. He said, I received no scholarships. I'm also taking classes at a local community college to further my education. I have a 4.0. Good for him. He said, I live comfortably in a cheap apartment. I know I can't have everything I want. I don't have cable, for example, and I eat out only a couple of times a month. I have a credit card because that's the good way to build credit, so smart there, good for him. He says, I use it rarely, pay it off 100% each month. He said, I don't have an iPad or a smartphone. He says, I'm perfectly okay with that. He said, in 2009, I got laid off because of the recession. Took him 4 months to find another job. And he says, I don't have any debt, but I do blame Wall Street for others' problems. He says, I blame them because it's their fault. And I don't know why we can't come to that conclusion. Look, the reality is the bankers did this. Wall Street did this. The investor class did this to us. He goes on to say, you know, I've been fortunate. I haven't made too many bad mistakes in my life. But unlike others who keep posting his rant, I do not operate under the delusion that my life is the default template for everyone who was born in this country. He said, not everyone had my upbringing, my supportive family, my circle of friends, my teachers, my school, my financial support during my childhood, my opportunities, my physical and mental advantages, or my encouragement. He goes on to say, I'm the 99%. And he says, look, if you don't make $350,000 a year or more, You are too. He said, being the 99% is not a choice. It's determined by your income. And which is why, you know, the city councilman or city commissioner there in Covington, Kentucky, who said, well, I'm gonna go Taliban on them because I'm one of the one percenters. No, you're not. You're not. And I like the girl who said, you know what, I am one of the one percenters. She said, I inherited my money at 21. I've had health insurance and dental insurance all my life. I want to live in a world where we all have enough. She says, I have more than enough. Tax me. Rich kid for redistribution. I am the 1% and I stand with the 99%. And it's got to be that kind of mentality, Jake, where people go, for a better society, we need to have a redistribution of wealth to where we have people who have the ability through the sweat of their labor to make a living and to raise their kids and to have a better future.
If you look at the history of this country and in the real down times, we're talking the Great Depression. And if you look at the Great Depression in Europe, there were also examples of where the rulers, in Europe it was rulers, here was FDR, who approached the rich. They approached them and said, look, this country's in bad shape. We're going to need you to jump on board. There's too many people hurting. And for their own enlightened self-interest, I don't believe it's there yet, but in the long run, the wealthy and those who are prospering by the system, if it continues to hurt most Americans, it's going to get to the point that for their very survival, they're going to have to jump on board and improve the system. And lucky for the wealthy in this country that FDR came to them. He said, look, you jump on board or they're going to be coming for you. Now, I do not believe it's there yet. I believe most of these people just believe in America and say, look, it's only fair that I pay my fair share. But if for no other reason, the wealthy and the corporate interests need to understand long-term for enlightened self-interest, you better change the system.
But at the end of this, you know, and I look at this and I go, you know, it's a nice tactic to divide people. That one little sliver of information that there are about 46-47% of the people who do not pay federal income tax. They pay a whole slew of other federal taxes, all state taxes and all of that as well. But it's a nice way to divide people. And the reason that folks don't pay that federal income tax is because they're not making a decent wage. It's based on how much you earn. And if you're in that 47%, you're struggling to get by. And the fact of the matter is, if you're in that 80%, people are struggling. And it's getting harder and harder and harder. And you look at the people who, you know, they're proud to pump out their chest and say, look at me, look what I've done. What they're telling you is, we're struggling. Virtually every one of those posts, they're struggling to make ends meet. One catastrophe, one job lost, one illness. The Marine who has no health care. What if he gets sick? What if his family gets sick? Something that we have to talk about. And that's why I think it's good what's going on, why these kids are in the street, and why these people, shouldn't keep saying kids, because there are a lot of folks my age and older who are in the streets as well. Because you know what? It's not doing that great for them either now. They're talking about taking Social Security and cutting Medicaid and cutting Medicare and destroying what is left of the tattered social safety net. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what we really need. What we need are jobs. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk. Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations, However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated, professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280, or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. You can also email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. So, you know, this whole thing to me could be solved very simply. A very robust, healthy, chunky, large, massive public works program. Get people back to work. You look at every governor, every one of these Republicans who ran in 2010. It's all about jobs, jobs, jobs. In fact, I've got a 48-page pledge. Well, I only downloaded the 21 pages. I could care less about the 27 pages of smiling pictures. I got the words. It probably could have condensed that into about a paragraph. Nonsense. But talk about jobs. Scott Walker said, hey, going to create jobs, 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 jobs. 250,000 jobs Scott Walker said he was going to create. Last time I checked, they were actually losing jobs. Tom Corbett said, we're going to create jobs, 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 jobs. Not happening. Rick Scott, guy down in Florida, going to create 700,000 to a million jobs in the next 4 years. So he said, I'm going to collect a million jobs. They're actually losing jobs now. In fact, he was out bragging not too long ago that he got to get rid of 15,000 government workers. You know, we just cut them down. In fact, he rejected the $2.4 billion federal money for a real program that would have put people back to work. About 24,000 jobs. Didn't want those. So now he's running around saying, well, you know, man, I don't have to really create any jobs. I don't have to. He said, you know, I just have to just not lose. We just have to make sure we don't lose jobs. That's the new measure now. We're not going to create the 700,000 to a million. We just want to stay where we were. We're kind of happy with the status quo. And I go, well, what about the 10.7% unemployment rate you've got? What about that? Crickets. You hear nothing. And what bothers me is you've got all these jobs plans out there. And, well, nothing. Nothing. And what's going on and where the frustration is. And you look at the Wall Street Journal today. They write that the American incomes have dropped since 2000. And they aren't expected to make up the lost ground before 2021. So we're not going to see income growth for 10 more years. They write from 2000 to 2010, median income in the U.S. declined 7% after adjusting for inflation. That mark is the worst 10-year performance going back to 1967. On average, the economists expect the inflation-adjusted incomes to rise over the next decade, but the 5% projected gain is not enough to get us back to where we were. So for the next decade, we're going to be behind where we were before Bush took office. And you ask, well, why are the college kids in the streets? Why are these college-age citizens? Why are they in the streets? Why? I'm so glad you asked. Because their economists, a third of their economists, say that those kids, those college graduates, well, they're going to have a less standard of living than their parents had. Now, the two-thirds of the other economists say, well, yeah, they might do as well, maybe a little bit better. But a third are saying, don't bet on it. Don't bet on it at all. And you have to ask why they're out there. I mean, the income is being held down. Why? Because we don't have jobs. The incomes are being held down. Why? Because people don't have money. We need jobs. Pretty simple. And what's going on is the Senate Republicans have a jobs plan. The House Republicans have a jobs plan. The Democrats have a jobs plan. The Progressive Caucus has a jobs plan. The president has two plans. He's got the new plan and the old plan. And guess what? Not one of these plans is going to pass because of the completely different mentalities of each side. The Republicans don't believe government can do anything. In fact, the government's the problem. And the Democrats are saying, look, only government can invest in these things. No private corporation's going to care about building a bridge that's going to connect Harrisburg. Nobody's going to care about repairing all of the infrastructure. They'll wait for it to fall down before they fix it. So the Republicans' grand plan, and we talked about this yesterday, their big plan, cut taxes, cut regulations, give more control to the corporations so they can police themselves, give them more money, give them everything that they want and hope and pray. And let's not forget repatriation. Let's not forget letting them bring back $1.3 trillion they've got stashed overseas. Now Democrats, they're going, we want roads and bridges. We want to invest in teachers and education, and we want to invest in health care and firefighters, and we want to invest in our communities. And you look at that jobs plan yesterday, the conservative wet dream. And at the end of it, who gets screwed? We do. There are no jobs there. And what do the Republicans tell us? We need to cut spending. If we could just cut spending. You know, we just cut like Rick Scott, cut 15,000 employees. Like Wisconsin, cut thousands of employees, cut, like all across the country, dumping city, state, federal workers, dumping workers, kicking them to the curb, freezing their pensions, freezing their health care, freezing their pay, actually stealing it back. And now you look at this report issued by the folks at the University of California, Berkeley, the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment. Now, remember, the Republicans told us, because it's those greedy union workers, it's those greedy public sector unions, it's those contracts, it's that collective bargaining. Well, according to the folks at UC Berkeley, Republicans are dead wrong again. UC Berkeley's findings conclude that the primary cause of state government budget deficits is the bursting housing bubble. And, of course, the economic downturn, thanks to Wall Street, has nothing to do with public sector union contracts. And you go, what? Those greedy workers didn't crash the economy? Really? Those self-serving public sector workers who only care for themselves,
when they rush into a burning building or brave the foul weather to rescue some idiot who got stuck in a big puddle? You mean they didn't cause the problem? Well, what do you know? And the reality is Republicans are full of it again. And yet you've got people who keep buying into this. And you look at all the states who have gone after collective bargaining rights because that's it. If we could just steal wages and benefits and all that, we could steal that back. We could balance our budgets. You got 12 states who did it. Pennsylvania wants to be one of those. So what have we done? Well, we've taken a boatload of money out of the economy by cutting these people off at the knees. We've taken a boatload of money out of the economy, and we've harmed these families. Why? Because we don't have something, and they shouldn't either. I mean, explain to me, Jake, how it is that one person in the working class making $40,000 can look at another person in the working class making $30,000 or $40,000 and say, you don't deserve health care. And not look to the guy who's making $63 billion a year paying the same tax rate going, oh, well, you deserve everything you need, sir. I'm completely lost on that.
And if you and I knew the answer, we could become a rich man. The Republicans and the right have always been good at dividing because, let's face it, they're in a distinct minority. We're in a majority. But as some very rich man once said, I can pay one half of the working class to kill the other half. And at least in theory, that's probably true today.
Well, you look at the streets of New York this morning. You look at those cops clubbing those kids, and you how can you argue with it? When we come back, we're going to talk about Rick Perry's job plan. The Republicans have another job plan. Well, it's the same old garbage. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Absence works. Maybe it's the way it's being taught or the way that it's being applied out there. But the fact of the matter is, it is the best form of to teach our children.
I wanna be a cowboy, and you can be my cowgirl. Tell me what you wanna
be. I gotta tell you, I'm. Rick Perry just makes me laugh. In fact, he was in Pittsburgh today He was at a U.S. steel plant in a suburb near Pittsburgh, where he outlined his new jobs plan. You know, the Herman Cain's got the 999 plan, claims it's going to create jobs. Now Perry has come out and said, you know what, I got a jobs plan too. And he said, you know, we're standing on top of the next American boom, energy, he said. The quickest way to give the America a shot in the arm, deploy American ingenuity, and tap into American energy. But we can only do that if the environmental bureaucrats are told to stand down. Just stand them down, right there. Simple stuff. And, you know, look, at the end of it, he's, you know, his big jobs plan is the same thing that the Republicans have been repeating ad nauseum for years. Drill, baby, drill. We don't care about your environment. We don't care about the water you drink, the air you breathe. Don't care. Just drill, baby, drill. Let's make rich people richer. And you look at the $17 million that Perry raised in the third quarter, and you got to wonder where that money came from. Maybe Tom Corbett knows. Same people right here in Pennsylvania talking about letting the natural gas industry drill, baby, drill. We don't care where, just do it. Drill, baby, drill. So he put out his 41-page plan, and it's really just a big giveaway. It's big oil, big drillers. It's their wet dream. It's, you know, if they wrote it themselves. Well, wait a minute. If they wrote it themselves, where have I been? If. Look at me with the if they wrote it. Chances are they wrote it, right?
Well, no. One of their lobbyists.
Same thing. But, you know, some of the things that are in this, and Judd Legum over at Think Progress did a nice job of throwing some things together. His top 10 giveaways to big oil, one of them being ending all regulations on fracking. So all the fracking that's going on around the state, we're not going to regulate that. Never mind. He wants to let each state do it, this whole race to the bottom, no federal oversight. So what we're going to see, the regulatory race to the bottom. He says he wants to end all regulations for big oil on any CO2 emission, because greenhouse gases are naturally occurring. You know, they're all around. See, it's part of it. You know, what happens is you get these animals, they exhale, and that's what you got. You know, it's the CO2 that they just exhale. If we just stop them from exhaling, it'll be okay. That's why we'll shoot them. So no more worry about big oil and no more worry about CO2 emissions. So, hey, you know, good. He also wants to allow big oil to drill on sensitive lands, stuff that we own. So, of course, ANWR, going to go there, the coastal plains. You know, they've got a whole list of places that have been fought for years. Because there's energy there, and we need to drill, baby, drill. Just get our little bit out and go. Because there's money to be had. And again, you know, you wonder, who gets all that money? Oh, yeah, the people who gave him $17 million in the third quarter. They want to end federal efforts to require development of renewable energy. So KISS solar, wind, geothermal, KISS tidal, KISS all that stuff goodbye. And as I've been saying, 2012 is 1980 all over again. They just want to take us back to the good old days where you just got to use oil. But you need to just burn stuff. Burning stuff's good. They want to cut the EPA budget by 60%. You want to talk about slash and burn? We want to make sure that we can't have them people looking around. We don't need no snoopy federal people around because, you know, they might find that we done something. Again, a moratorium on all new regulations. They want to eliminate tax incentives for renewable energy, and they want to create additional subsidies for guess who? You can say it, big oil. So more money for the big oil companies, less for getting us off of it. It's kind of like going to a methadone clinic and saying, no, don't take the methadone. Here's heroin. It's much better. Take the heroin. Oh. They also want to kneecap anyone filing a lawsuit over any violation by big oil. Since there'll be no rules, you know, I don't know why this is such a big thing. Since nobody's going to be watching, there's going to be nothing, no rules, no one watching. Who's going to sue them? But in the off chance that someone does, they are going to change the laws and allow big oil to get out of being sued.
Again, you know, more of the, we need to pander to the very wealthy. They want to fast track drilling permits. You gotta let them drill off the coast so we can have more trouble. And of course, they're gonna top immediate improve, immediate push of the Keystone XL pipeline, which, you know, hey, if that's your thing, there you go. And I look at this jobs plan and I go, what's the difference from the last 20 years? And is it a jobs plan? Not really. Maybe there is. And I've been thinking about this whole idea of disaster capitalism. We create these massive problems. We create this massive disasters. We destroy things. We destroy the environment. We allow them to pollute, and we allow them to screw up the land. And then we got to go in and clean it up. And the companies never do. The polluters never go in and have to clean it up. It's we, the taxpayers, that get stuck with it. And you think of the biggest example is the Love Homes. Remember that back from years and years ago?
Love Canal.
Yeah, we're still stuck with that. Those builders, they didn't get stuck. They didn't have to pay for it. We did. You look at all the stuff that went on with the coal industry. When we didn't regulate that, who's still cleaning that mess up? We are. I wish, and there's part of me that wishes that we would start thinking about this stuff. Look, I am not against drilling for natural gas. If we can do it in a way that's not going to pollute my water and is not going to destroy the air. And please, don't put it next to a school. That's all I'm asking. I mean, there's got to be a way of doing it in a very environmentally sound way. And I understand it might be more costly, but in the long run, is it really going to be more costly?
This natural gas we are talking about the world's biggest find. There is no reason why the companies coming in here can't be good to the environment, treat the people of this state fairly, and still make a lot of money. And what do the Republicans do? I got in front of me, Rick, a news report that says 13 Republican Pennsylvania congressmen already penned off a letter to the Obama administration, the head of the director of the National Economic Council. And you know what they said? There's four federal agencies now reviewing it. And we're concerned that they're not focusing in on the right issues. In other words, what they're saying is, we don't want any oversight that would prevent these companies from basically doing what they want. They're at it already. And there is no reason for it. This is a pot of gold. If we all work together, the companies can make fortunes. Pennsylvania can benefit. The individual farmers and landowners can be set for the rest of their life, and we can create a lot of Pennsylvania jobs if we do it right.
And look, I understand the idea of we shouldn't be doing it all. I get it. It's just not realistic. And if I thought it were something that were possible, I would consider it. But I just don't. You're never going to stop this trend. What you have to do is you have to regulate it. You have to make sure that you get in front of every obstacle. You have to make sure that you get in front of every potential problem and make sure that they're taken care of. And down the road, make sure that the air we breathe and the water we drink is not polluted. And then if it is, you hold those people accountable, and you hold them big time accountable, because we cannot have another scenario where we, the taxpayers, are stuck with it.
Well, there's another issue, and quickly, we're going to run out of time, but just as in Antwar with the oil, that oil would be going overseas anyway. It's the same thing with the natural gas. They say you need to be energy independent. Well, guess what? They're already pushing for selling natural gas overseas.
Yeah, old GT, Glenn Thompson, saying, let's sell that overseas. Sell it to the Chinese. A lot of profit there. Make big money. Sure, I got some stock. You bet. Anyway, going to take a quick break. When we come back, I think we're going to talk with Jefferson Pepper about the Occupy Harrisburg, which is going to start in just about an hour. After the program, we're going to run over there. I hope you'll come out, too, right there at the steps of 3rd and State at the Capitol. We're going to take a quick break right back after this with Jefferson Pepper. Stick around.
Money is a gas.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. So Congress won't pass a jobs bill to put us back to work, but did pass three global trade deals that the government's own studies show will add to our trade deficit, thereby costing us more jobs. That's exactly what happened. Protesters spoke out against the trade deals as the Senate was passing them. As they were being arrested and escorted out, the protesters reminded the senators that in Colombia, they're killing union people.
Killing labor leaders.
The hearing will come to order. Comments from the audience are inappropriate. There's a time and place for everything. There's a time for demonstrations. There's a time for statements. And there's a time.
They kill labor leaders. Keep the jobs short.
Global Trade Watch's Todd Tucker says these trade deals are terrible for working people and will cost more U.S. jobs.
All three of these trade agreements are projected to increase the deficit, projected to increase job losses, and are going to give corporations a whole host of powers to be able to challenge government regulations that they don't like. This is really going to be an economic disaster for American workers.
Workers in the midst of contract negotiations are receiving more support than normal in the streets of New York and D.C. Jesse Russell reports.
One unexpected result of the Occupy Wall Street movement is a larger audience for workers in and around Wall Street seeking to have their grievances heard. Nearly 1,000 office cleaners and security officers from buildings in the area marched on Wall Street Wednesday demanding better paying jobs. Meanwhile, similar action was taking place in Washington, D.C., where there's an Occupy D.C. rally. In advance of an office cleaner march on K Street, the 13 members of the D.C. Council unanimously pledged support for those workers. The workers are in the middle of a contract negotiation, and the expiration date for that contract is this coming Monday. They're represented by the Service Employees International Union, and negotiations are currently held up over wages and health benefits. If an agreement isn't reached by Monday, the workers will most likely be putting down their cleaning tools and walking out of the offices Tuesday morning.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part by the United Steelworkers and by the United Mine Workers of America. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
You want the witness of change in the counteract? We gotta take the power back.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to the website and get the podcast. Or if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app. Take the program on the go with you. So the National Priorities Project, in partnership with the Citizens for Tax Justice, they just released a new site tracking the ever-growing cost of the Bush handouts. And it's kind of interesting what they found. They found that the handouts to the top 5% of those folks in the country are costing our Treasury $11.6 million every hour of every single day. You want to know why those people are in the streets? There's a good reason why. I love the teabaggers who say, oh, gee, we don't want to redistribute wealth. What do you think's happened, man? What do you think has happened? Well, a little bit under an hour. Hopefully there are going to be hundreds of protesters on the street there, 3rd Street and State. on the steps, or near the steps. I guess they're not allowed on the steps, but near the steps of the Capitol. And I've got Jefferson Pepper. He's one of the media outreach folks with Occupy Harrisburg. They've got a website, OccupyHarrisburg.org. We've got a link at the site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Jefferson, thank you for taking time for us.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
This is exciting stuff. I'm really excited to see what comes out of this.
Yeah, I'll say, man. We really have no idea what to expect. As you know, this is a really fledgling movement. We just, you know, had our first meeting less than 2 weeks ago. We had our second meeting last Sunday, so we had 6 days to prepare for this big event. But it's a perfect time to do it. And it's going to really be interesting to see what happens. I'm hoping for the best here, for sure.
Yeah, the righties are portraying you guys as, well, you don't know why you're there. Oh, you're violent hippies. Your radicals are going to destroy the country, or you're ignorant and don't know. None of that seems to be the case with me. I guess I should let you. Why are you going out?
I'm going out for economic justice. You know, I'm honestly not the kind of person that's a protest kind of person. You know, years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I started thinking about it. And then, you know, when things just got completely out of control, it, you know, you sort of like, it's the tipping point, you know, the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I reached that point. And it's just maddening.
And I've heard that time and time again,
yeah,
from the folks that we've talked to. We were down in Philly for a while. I've talked to people from all around the country who, almost the same story. Look, you know, I'm struggling. We're busting our behinds. We're not getting ahead, and yet we see the wealth of this country being concentrated into the hands of a very few. When you have 1% of the people in this country who own 40% of the wealth, 1% of the country who owns more than half of all stocks and bonds, you've got a distribution problem.
Yeah, I'll say. And you know, that 40% may even be low, because I don't know if they're factoring in black market things, which are $690 billion a year, offshore accounts, you know, and who has the offshore accounts? Not the everyday Joe like me and you. It's the ultra rich.
And you look at all that money that they've got parked overseas, the $1.3 trillion in corporate profits that they refuse to pay tax on. And now, yeah, they're coming and saying, oh, please, can we bring it back and not pay too much tax on it, so we can divvy it up like we did the last time amongst our friends?
Yeah, it's just really ridiculous. And what I've seen, the thing that really got to me was the stories that I've heard from people. Like, I actually have a friend who's really proud of his daughter. She just graduated with a master's degree from MIT with honors and an engineering degree. She cannot find a job.
And if she does, it'll probably only be about $25,000, and, because we're importing them from India.
Yeah, and the thing that is interesting in some of the mainstream media, and I don't want to knock all the mainstream media. I'm not here to disparage anyone, but
leave that to me.
But I think, you know, this movement is being portrayed as, quote, a bunch of stinky hippies that are too lazy to get a job. Well, here's a woman who did what she was supposed to do, and this story plays out
time and time
thousands of times over. You know, she did everything she was supposed to do. She did her studies, went into a lot of debt to get a good degree, MIT for God's sakes, and can't find a job. You know, there's just one story out of the multitude that are out there, and there are a lot of them. And, you know, when you think about also people on fixed incomes that put in their time, that worked hard all of these years, good, hardworking people who had, you know, their money plundered by criminals. And these people on fixed incomes, they were depending on this money.
Absolutely.
They were depending on this money in their golden years. And now what do? They have to get a greeter job at Walmart to pay the bills.
If they can get that.
It's sickening.
If they can get that, because the problem is, and what I've been saying all along, the problem is jobs. We need to have a jobs bill. We need to have something that puts people back to work in major fashion.
Sure.
You talk about a 9.1% unemployment rate. Those are only the people collecting unemployment checks. Those aren't the people who have fallen off the rolls. Those aren't the people who are working two or three or four jobs. And earlier in the program, we were talking about this idiot who started this, I am the 53%. I don't know if you've seen this, where they list all the wonderful things. You know, I've worked three jobs and I don't have health care and I don't whine. Well, you should be complaining. If you're working three jobs and can't make ends meet and you don't have health care, you're exactly the person who should be out there.
Right. But, you know, the one thing, Rick, that we all have in common is that we all base our idea of reality upon information from sources that we trust. unfortunately, not all sources are to be trusted.
Right.
And so good, hard-working people like the gentleman you just described are obviously listening to sources that are giving him a sense of reality that it just is not reality, you know.
My favorite one was the girl who, she said, I'm 18 and my father works 70, 80 hours a week and he's putting my sister and I through college and I don't expect anything from anyone and I don't want any handouts. And I'm going, well, your father's paying for your college.
By working two jobs, 80 hours a week.
And you're not part of the 53% because you're not paying taxes. And what it is it's a nice division. The wealth class has figured out a nice division between you and me and other folks by saying these are the people who aren't paying federal taxes.
Right. We'll let them all scuffle for the scraps and fight amongst each other. And the thing is, this very large percentage of people are fighting over a piece of the pie that is so ridiculously small. And I think that's the key. Once people realize that, I think they have to get angry, don't they?
Absolutely. And that's why this, what's going on, and here in less than, about 50 minutes, we'll begin Occupy Harrisburg. If you're up, you're out, you're around, stop down on 3rd Street right at State there, near the Capitol steps. I'm hoping to see a nice crowd come out. Because the majority of people, they are struggling to make ends meet. To me, the answer has always been join and form unions, collective bargaining, give people the right to contracts, and fight for a piece of the wage.
You're right.
When I listened to the Tea Party when they were early on, I was with them. I was angry. I was frustrated. I got it. Then they kind of just went some weird, bizarre pro-business, anti-government way.
Well, wasn't there a lot of Coke money behind that?
Exactly. And not just Coke, but all of the billionaire class, the Scaifes and all of them kicked in. And you look at the privatization money that's coming in for education, the next battlefront. It's all the big funders. And, you know, what the mainstream media is trying to then portray is, well, George Soros is behind your movement. Did you get any George Soros money?
Not a penny. In fact, I just spent about $600 on printing costs out of my own pocket, which I don't honestly have, and my wife's a little mad at me. But I thought it was important to send a unified message, so we decided on some placards to be holding up. What do we say? Honk if you agree with the 99%. Honk if you support the 99%. So we're going to try to get a lot of people honking. So you guys out there, if you come by the Capitol building, you better honk for us, all right?
I hope so. You know, I mean, that's an energy boost. But at the end of the day, people want to know what the direction is. And I guess you guys haven't really figured that out, which I guess to me is kind of a good thing. Because then you're not pushing in one direction or the other.
Yeah, we actually do have a direction. We've decided at the start to start with just the national issues. You know, that 7-point plan that's out there. And I don't know if you want me to go through those
which
points,
I agree
which
with
our demands.
I agree with 100% and have gone through them numerous times over the last couple of days because I think it's a good start.
Yeah.
Hold those people accountable on Wall Street.
Sure.
Take money out of politics. Smart stuff. Go back and reinstate Glass-Steagall.
Yep.
Good start.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if we could get those things done, then we're going to move on to Plan B. But also, we're at some point, I have a feeling, now I can't speak for the other folks who are in this, but it seems to me that at some point, it's going to turn also to state and local politics, because we've got something brewing right here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that needs to be dealt with, and it's a symptom of the same kinds of things.
It's all tied together.
It is all tied together.
Because you look at Harrisburg's problems, it's not the fact that the public sector workers are making too much. It's not those greedy city workers or those greedy firemen. No, it's the fact that the economy tanked, Wall Street stole most of the money, and there were some dumb political decisions made.
Sure.
So here, like I said, in a little less than an hour, I guess the first thing you're going to do is hold a general assembly to discuss where to go, what to do, correct?
Yeah, some planning. We're just, you know, going to do a little education on what your rights are, what you can do, what you cannot do in a protest. Most of all, we want to be respectful for the police officers that are there. I for one am happy that they're there, and you know, we have to remember the police are part of the 99% too.
And they need to remember that too.
Yes, they do. And you know, I'm not one for an us versus them mentality. I think it's counterproductive often. except when it comes to sociopaths. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to come out against sociopaths that steal our money from us. But I certainly don't have an in-group, out-group thing with the police. I'm happy they're there, and we should do nothing but
You respect them along. And you treat them well.
Yeah.
And this thing cannot, under any circumstances, have any hint of violence whatsoever. Even if there are Koch brother mentality out there where they're gonna plant troublemakers, this is something that I believe firmly in.
That's already happened too. It's already happened. That's another thing about our group is we absolutely do not condone any violence of any kind, and we won't stand for it.
Because you're gonna have plants.
Yes, and I was in D.C. last Saturday for the rally, and I was on the march that went over to the Space Center. Some of the folks that were, talking about the drones, they were protesting the drones being there. And there was a plant at the front of the line. Did you read about this?
Paul Singer's guy, sure.
It's the guy who's the journalist, and yep. Then he bragged about it in his article. He bragged about stirring up trouble and getting people maced in the face. I was 5 feet behind the crowd of people that got maced. I just missed it.
The poetic justice in that is that he got maced as well.
Yeah.
And that's the best part of it.
But he snuck out of the building in time and didn't get arrested. But, you know, it's that sort of thing. It's really interesting to me. Would that person not be a sociopath to do something like that? No regard for others whatsoever and just trying to stir up trouble to make another group look bad? I'm not going to lie about anything to make somebody else look bad. We already know who we are, and we know who they are. You know what I'm saying? I don't need to manufacture truth.
It goes back to the old Jay Gould quote. I can easily pay half the working class to kill the other half.
Yeah.
And there lies a lot of truth.
Divide and conquer.
Absolutely. OccupyWallStreet.org is the website. We hope a lot of folks come out, say hello, stop by. I guess you're going to be there all weekend, or is this just a 24-hour thing?
This is 24 hours, and we do have a Facebook page. It's Occupy Harrisburg, and it's OccupyHarrisburg.org. We have a Twitter account, too, and a YouTube channel. So we're putting up individual stories of why we are the 99%.
All right, and this is going to tie into the National Day of Solidarity tomorrow?
Yes, it does tie into that. Yes, indeed.
All right, OccupyHarrisburg.org. Jefferson Pepper, I appreciate the time.
Hey,
I look forward to standing out there with you sometime this evening.
I appreciate it, Rick. Thank you very much.
All right, again, OccupyHarrisburg.org. We got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Jefferson Pepper's name. I'll take you right there. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
Through the door, it's death for console, death for measures we explore. Marching on the Capitol to lobby leaders for involvement. 3,000 people screaming out,
where's our government?
Lawsuits and arraignments, members under company surveillance. Public divided, either they love us or they hate us. Profit billions off our back, and it's still not enough. They should have broken through a gap
that we never give up.
We'll be here one day longer.
Radio experience where hard work, common sense, and rational thoughts are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, gosh, look at this. The Republican Party does have a presidential candidate who's not a far-right goofball, a product of Wall Street banksters, a tripped-out cokehead, or a yee-hawing BSer from Texas. Because of what this contender is not, and of what he is, you've probably never heard of him, and chances are quite good that he'll not be the GOP nominee. But Buddy Romer should be listened to and ought to be the nominee of some party, because he's making a heap of sense. Not only is he daring to speak truth to power, but truth about power. The central issue, says this former member of Congress and former Republican governor of Louisiana, is, quote, the corruptive power of big money in campaigns. It's about the big checks and special interests. And it's Democrat and Republican. The political and media establishment have responded to such rare honesty and blunt talk with blanket coverage of Romer's campaign, by which I mean they've thrown a heavy blanket over him, hoping he'll neither be seen nor heard by voters who might actually like what he's saying. He's not been allowed in any of the GOP's presidential debates, for example, even though his 1-2% showing in the polls is slightly better than that of John Huntsman, who has been consecrated as a serious candidate by the political cognoscenti. Here's a little sampler of Romer's ideas. I would have a rule that lobbyists could not give a check to a candidate, that PACs could give no more than individuals, that there'd be no super PACs, and, he adds, I would have a rule that there would be criminal penalties for violation of these rules. This is Jim Hightower saying, this guy might actually be the people's buddy. Wouldn't you like to see Rick, Mitt, Michelle, and the rest have to deal with him in debates? To learn more, go to www.buddyromer.com. That's buddyromer, R-O-E-M-E-R.com. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, that's the place you go. You can download the podcast. Or if you got a smartphone, Stitcher is the app to get. You can take the program with you. Also, you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on in just about 40 minutes. But, you know, here's the thing. This whole Occupy thing may not last very long. Might be over before it really takes off, according to Family Radio's Harold Camping, who is back in the news again. Evidently, Harold has recovered from his stroke, which he had back in June, and the 90-year-old is back on the radio, where he told his followers that the end of the world will probably be October 21st. So tentatively mark that on your calendar. Probably maybe the 22nd, but it's definitely coming. He said, I do believe we're getting very near the end. We've learned that there's a lot of things we didn't have quite right, and that's God's provision. If he had kept us all knowing that everything we didn't know, we would not be able to be used by him and bring about the tremendous event that occurred on May 21st. And I'm not quite sure what happened on May 21st. The end of the world didn't come, which that was his fourth prediction. He had predicted the end of the world was sometime in 92. Then again, you know, he went back to the abacus and came up with 1994. That didn't happen. Maybe took a computer class, came up with May 21st of this year. That didn't happen. So now, you know, maybe a little advanced tracking October 21st. That's going to be the end of the world. That's it. No question about, well, maybe, probably. Probably. So there you go. Mark that on the tentatively. Put it in pencil so you can easily erase it. And look, at 90 years old, Jake, the end of the world may be coming for him any day.
90.
So October 21st may be the end of his world.
Well, maybe that explains some of his positions also.
Yeah, well, you know, to have 90 good years, God bless him. You know, here's another one of those funny things. And Rick Perry was on with George Stephanopoulos this morning on Good Morning America. Evidently, his wife was campaigning in South Carolina. And she said, we're being brutalized by our opponents in our own party. So much that it is, I think they took at him because of his faith. He's the only true conservative. Well, there are some conservatives, and they're good for reasons. So basically saying, you know, the only reason people are attacking him is because he's religious. So he was on with Stephanopoulos, and Stephanopoulos asked him about it. And he says, you know, I stand by my wife. I think she's right in both cases. My understanding is that she said I'm the most conservative candidate in the race, and he's Christian, so I haven't gotten anything to add. She's hit me right on the mark in both things. So I guess the fact that he's a crummy debater has nothing to do with it. I think the fact that his rhetoric all over the map, that, you know, a blind guy with a dartboard could do a better job of pinning down. But that has nothing to do with it. I think his inconsistent approach to a lot of issues, a whole bunch of stuff. That whole thing with the pastor that called Romney's religion a cult, the fact that he wouldn't back away from that, it's because he's too religious. He's just too religious. That's why the Republicans hate him. Wow. You want to talk about a candidacy in trouble? You know, I look at Ron Paul. Ron Paul's campaign is denying that his eyebrows fell off.
Evidently, during the last debate, the lights got a little hot. And someone claims that it looked like he had a prosthetic hair strip over his eyebrow. This is what they're saying. If you look at the picture, it looks kind of funny. He said, no, just a little bit of allergies, he had and you go, allergies? Allergies make your eyebrows fall off? I don't know. So, you know your campaign is losing when you're answering questions about eyebrows.
You know, I often thought that George Bush was the easiest guy in the world to take a pot shot at, but, you know, these guys are even easier than George Bush. Every day there's a new screw-up.
You gotta love it, man. Herman Cain's chief advisor, his chief economic advisor, this Richard Lowry, who he keeps saying, he's the guy who designed the 999 plan. Well, Rich says, now understand, Rich was, you know, he's not such a good big picture guy. I don't think he really understands too much of the big picture, according to some reports. He was an investment advisor for Wells Fargo. So I don't know that I'm going to put an awful lot of credence in what he has to say. But he said what will happen economically is that the economy will expand by $2 trillion. 6 million jobs are going to be created, bringing the unemployment rate down to a more typical or natural rate of 4 or 4.5%. Wages are going to go up by 10%. And, of course, we're going to cure cancer, herpes, and jock itch all along with it, of course. He didn't say the end part. I just added that because, if magically we're going to have the economy expand by $2 trillion, we're going to create 6 million jobs and have an unemployment rate of 4%, which in the last 100 years, I can only think of a couple of times where the unemployment rate has been at 4%. But, you know, hey, why ruin a good talking point? Now, the National Retail Federation is saying, whoa, wait a minute. Hold on. It may sound like a great little scheme, but Keynes' 999 plan is going to institute the first ever national sales tax. And what it could do is it's going to dampen consumer spending. In fact, Rachel Bernstein, the National Retail Federation's tax expert, said it will hurt demand and slow the economic recovery. You definitely do not want this. And what I find amazing is you look at Moody's, who's come out and said, look, you know, all of these Republican plans, they're not very good. And they looked at the one that we talked about yesterday, the real, not the American Jobs Act, the real American Jobs Act. And they're saying, it's not going to help the economy in the short term. In fact, it could even make the economy worse. Now, Moody's did say the Obama plan would create close to 2 million jobs, would help to grow the economy by 2%, and would drop unemployment down by a percentage point. So here's Moody's saying, now understand, Moody's is run by a guy who, if I remember right, was a McCain advisor. Saying, look, the Obama plan is going to create close to 2 million jobs. We're going to get that 2% growth in the economy, drop unemployment by a percent. You know, if we went even further, we could probably do more. But they go on to say, look, you know, the plan here, not happening. The Republicans are, it's a dumb idea to cut demand in a weak economy. It's a dumb idea to cut demand when businesses aren't hiring. It's a dumb idea to cut money into the economy when consumers start spending. It's only going to cause things to get worse, and it could send us into another recession, which I got to be honest, well, I think that's what they want. Because remember, this week the Republicans did filibuster Obama's jobs plan. And as I've been saying, look, you know, we need a jobs plan. And there was a viable one on the table, one that I think everybody liked and hated at the same time. I liked it and I hated it both at the same time. There were things that I would have never put into it. And there are things that I would have made bigger. So at some point you go, okay, that's something I thought both parties could probably have come together on, Republicans filibustered. Want to talk about another campaign going downhill? Michelle Bachmann, going straight downward. You know what? I'm tired of talking about Michelle Bachmann. The campaign is dead.
She's a non-player.
It's over now. Let's go to another quick story. Nick, they're talking about, you know, we've been talking about this. There haven't been enough people going to jail. Not enough of these big banksters going off to the Gray Bar Hotel. Well, someone just pled guilty to running a $413 million Ponzi scheme, a guy named Nicholas Cosmo. Yeah, well, he was sentenced to 25 years in prison. Seems he was taking in a boatload of money to pay, pay debts that he had today, and your classic Ponzi scheme. I would like to get him on the program and ask him about Social Security. I wonder, I would love to hear him say, I'm Nicholas Cosmo. I'm spending the next 25 years in prison, and I know Ponzi schemes, and Social Security is no Ponzi scheme. No?
Just a guess, Rick, at this point, I'm
probably
not
so
sure
that
Social Security is first and foremost in his mind.
I'm sure iron underwear. Ironclad underwear.
There you go.
The chastity belt, if you will. Here it is again. They're pushing. Want that corporate profit repatriation. They want to bring that money back into the country. You've got the Chamber of Commerce. You got a whole bunch of people pushing for this. And, you look at what happened back in 2004 when the Bush administration and the Republicans rammed through what they called the American Job Creation Act of 2004. You got to love that. The American Job Creation Act of 2004. The only problem is they laid off a little more than 100,000 people. They brought, that 100, I guess it was the top 12, if I remember right, that brought home somewhere around $100 billion that they were divvying up amongst each other. And they pocketed it and weren't very unhappy about it. And then laid off 67,000 workers, just those top 12 recipients. Now you look at all the money that came back, and it didn't do much to help job creation at all. The 13 of the companies, Yum Brands, General Electric, International Paper, Kodak, these huge companies, Kraft, Honeywell, Intel, Eli Lilly, Starwood Hotels, Praxair, Lexmark, Hasbro, Boston Scientific, these huge companies, brought all this money back, and what they do? They cut tens of thousands of jobs. What's to tell us that it isn't going to happen again? Now, remember that bill back in 2004? Was supposed to be a one-time thing. That's it, one time. We're going to get our money back, and then we're going to end it. And now here they are, just 7 years later, going, oh, can we do it again? I say you end that deferment. End it now. Say no more. You're going to either pay taxes on it or that money stays. And from now on, you pay tax on absolutely every bit of profit. That's how you solve these problems. You don't let them have that loophole anymore. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around, right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. and around the world, our good friend Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you very much. Well, and we do have some breaking news, or more breaking than when you and I will often touch.
Hit me with it.
Well, the White House has said, according to senior officials, that they will not turn over all Solyndra documents to Congress. A letter obtained by CNN says that they will not turn over President Obama's messages and other White House communications related to Solyndra, arguing the president needs to protect open counsel from advisors and staff.
I don't know. Again, you know, I think there's trouble there.
I think there potentially is, but I think, you know, when it's the president's BlackBerry, I think that there's going to be a line drawn, and I think there have been lines drawn in previous administrations, and it was just very likely that this president was going to draw the same one and do it at around 6:30 on a Friday afternoon.
And, exactly. I mean, that's the best way to do it because everyone's out to dinner at this time.
Yes.
But here's the thing. My problem with any of that stuff is the second it appears that you're covering something up, it then turns into something. And while,
exactly.
And the right wing is just frothing at the mouth, all tingly in the panties, to kill the solar industry, and this will be one more dagger to go after it.
It's a huge problem. Solyndra is a huge problem, whether or not there was anything criminal. And there certainly seems to be no indication that there was. It is a huge PR problem.
And my problem is I'm a big fan of solar. I think it has to be part of our energy policy for generations to come. But it's at the very beginning stages, and the Republicans want to take us back to 1980 and kill it all over again so that we can be stuck with oil for the next 30 years.
Well, of course, speaking of that, Rick Perry gave a speech today in which he talked about how he was going to get well over a million jobs very quickly in his first term as president, and that was, in fact, by drilling.
Drill, baby, drill.
Drill, baby, drill. That's what he says we should be doing, increase oil and energy production. He would be drilling everywhere, off the Atlantic coast, around Alaska, on federal lands in western states, everywhere except the Everglades, and, of course, in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Would he do as Tom Corbett, our governor here in Pennsylvania, had proposed, and have all the schools have their own wells? They could drill right on school property.
You know, I don't know that he's thought of that yet, but now you mention it.
Because that was part of the plan. You know, we don't want to raise taxes on them at a time when we're cutting $1 billion from education. So, you know, maybe the schools could get in the boom and they could put their own wells right next to the cafeteria. In fact,
wow.
You could probably just put a hose right from the well right to the school and just right out of the tap.
Wow.
Yeah, that's our governor. Gotta love that. And speaking of schools, you know, I saw this, this 11th Circuit decision. I can't believe that the state of Alabama wants to turn teachers into immigration officers, but that's kind of what they were trying to do, isn't it?
Well, and in fact, they have done that, and to such an extent that Hispanic children were leaving schools in extremely noticeable numbers. And it was really at that point that the Justice Department said, we want you to look at this law. And so the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta today stayed a couple of parts of Alabama's immigration law. And the two parts being stayed are, one, Section 28, which allows public school students to be questioned about their immigration status. So that is stopped for now. And Section 10, which requires immigrants to carry an alien registration card. That is also stopped for now. And they did it because they said, plaintiffs at the DOJ have met four tests for an injunction, including substantial likelihood they'll prevail on the merits of the appeal, risk of irreparable injury to the parties unless the injunction is granted, no substantial harm to other interested persons, and no harm to the public interest.
Interesting. I mean, this is why, you know, I look at these and I look at all of the other bills, the Republican bill that, you know, if a woman's a victim of domestic violence, she gets deported. You know, those bills, that stuff really highlights for me the fact that we absolutely need a national immigration policy, something that's going to solve these problems and stop with the states doing each of their own little piecemeal things.
And, of course, that is exactly what the president is talking about. Now, Herman Cain, on the other hand, believes in doing the opposite. He believes that states should deal with the immigration issue on their own separately.
Yeah, I mean, because, look, you know, there are people who are going to be here. I don't want a dumb next generation. I want those kids to get an education, and, you know, that's part of it. But also, you know, there's the other part that there are folks who, if you're here in an illegal and an undocumented fashion, we need to know who you are.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Some bad news. How are you taking this thing with the president sending 100 military personnel to Central Africa?
I'm still absorbing it, actually. It's just very interesting. It's potentially bad news for the Lord's Resistance Army, actually, and potentially bad news for Joseph Kony, and that would be the hope, because the Lord's Resistance Army has murdered, raped, kidnapped, tortured, mutilated, and enslaved tens of thousands of men, women, and children for the last two decades in Central Africa. And that's why we've sent these 100 military personnel into Central Africa to advise and provide information and things to the military over there not to be involved themselves so that they can get rid of it.
Yeah, but, I mean, if we're going to be sending people to everywhere where you have some scumbag causing trouble, we'll be everywhere.
Well, that's right. That's right. And it is only 100. Now, he says he's doing it. He said it impacts regional security. And so that's one of the reasons why he's doing it. And the other reason is that it's pursuant to a law that Congress has passed. He says it's in furtherance of the Congress's stated policy.
So what kind of beating is he going to take from the righties over? Because, look, I've always been one to say, you know, if we can help, let's help. I don't know that 100 is a great idea, but what are you hearing from the other side?
These are crack forces, like, you know, special forces types.
Okay.
So, you know, one is worth 10.
Okay. So
they're really, really hot guys. Actually, I have to tell you that talking to my more conservative hosts and my Tea Party types this afternoon, I was not hearing criticism. One person suggested it was wag the dog scenario, but everybody else was saying, yeah, you can't have people going around doing that sort of thing. This is exactly what he should do.
Yeah, there's part of me that says, yeah, we need to be doing these things, but if you're going to choose one area, why'd you choose one over another? That's my
you're not God.
Yeah, true. Good point. Lastly, the super committee, their meeting, no Nancy Pelosi, huh?
Yeah, the super committee, the leaders of Congress arranged a meeting to talk about the super committee. And so, this is just really a sidebar story, but it's just fascinating. So basically, you had, you know, the top leaders of the super committee, and they had Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Speaker Boehner, and Senate Minority Whip John Kyle, Mitch McConnell, all kinds of people. And Nancy Pelosi didn't know the meeting was taking place. They're all declining to comment on the nature of the discussions. They all confirmed she wasn't there. And Pelosi and Reid held their regular weekly meeting moments after the session in McConnell's office ended. So it's really weird. They're saying there was a miscommunication, but this is very odd because she has been cut out of things quite a bit recently.
So mutiny on the sides of the Democrats, or do you think it was just a minor oversight?
I don't know. I mean, in April's negotiations to pass a continuing resolution and stop a government shutdown, she was not in the mix with Reid, Boehner, and President Obama, who ended up negotiating the deal on their own.
Wow. So maybe she has been cut out a little bit, probably by the White House.
It's possible.
So anything additional with the super committee? I mean, the deadline is nearing.
The deadline for committees to submit their ideas is today. And so House Democrats submitted ideas from 16 committees. House Republicans doing it differently. They've just been sort of talking and submitting ideas separately. The Armed Services Committee, I think it's the Senate Armed Services Committee, are basically saying, look, we do not want any more defense cuts at all. We can't afford any more defense cuts at all. And the two leaders in the House, actually, both Republican and Democrat, singing from the same hymn book, saying this could threaten national security, and just saying you can't do this. Meanwhile, Senator John McCain is threatening that this trigger that will be pulled if, in fact, they don't get to an agreement, half of the cuts in that are defense cuts, he's threatening to just nullify it.
Interesting. So do you think they're going to come to an agreement with the trigger cutting half of the with half the cuts coming from the military budget?
I think they're going to have some difficulty getting to an agreement.
Yeah, I do too. I think the trigger is probably what's going to happen, and then they're going to try and figure out how to walk back from the trigger.
Yeah, I think that's most likely.
Yeah. Well, we will see. Victoria Jones, have a great weekend. We look forward to talking to you guys, talking to you on Monday.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Now to find out what's going on across the street. What do you got for us tonight, Jay?
Yeah, Rick, a little behind-the-scenes information of what happened in New York. As soon as these protesters found out, there were a bunch of progressive organizations along with labor who immediately launched an online and email campaign. They within several hours got about 20,000 people to sign on. President Trumka, the national president of the AFL-CIO, came out and condemned what was going on, and probably what was most important, the president of the Central Labor Council of New York, and you have to understand that New York is a big union town. He represents hundreds of thousands of workers, met with the mayor. In addition to that, representatives from the real estate company that owns the park and Occupy Wall Street, which was the hierarchy of the demonstrators, then met, and they cleared that up. But without the pressure from labor and without the pressure also from some politicians that were sympathetic, this would not have come down. But good story. Good article out of the AFL-CIO website. An article that talks about something we have talked about repeatedly, inequity, income inequity. And according to this, there were times in our country's history that has threatened national stability. A man by the name of James Chamos, who's president and founder of the New York-based investment firm Kinokis Associates, has said this. He said, "Left unchecked, our present system and the decades-long trend towards increasing inequity may condemn Wall Street to a generation of unimpressive returns and even shake social stability." Nano Tobimi, who's chairman of Robimi Global Economics, said this: "Any economic model that does not properly address inequity will eventually face a crisis of legitimacy unless the relative economic roles of the market and the state are rebalanced. The protest of 2011 will become more severe with social and political instability eventually occurring." And then we have Warren Buffett's son, Howard, who said this: "There has never been a larger gap earnings in this country. There has never been a time in my lifetime when the government is going to cut an incredible amount of programs that support poor people." Now, what does this all mean? I kept referring, I did it today again, FDR in a situation with the wealthy. If, in fact, they wouldn't have been able to turn it around, and fortunately, he got them on board at the right time. The first FDR term was in 32. Country was in horrible shape. Better than 30% unemployed. Millions, literally millions, going to breadlines every day. He went to the wealthy. He went to the corporate elite. And to their everlasting credit, they came on board. And he was able to create the CC. He was able, when was it, 36, to create Social Security. He turned this country around, and in the 40s, the middle class became a burgeoning class. After the war, it exploded and became the greatest economic force, literally, in the history of the world. Now, there's a lot of historians that say, look, if these wealthy and these corporate elites wouldn't have come along and things would have gotten worse, there is a possibility that we would have entered into a second revolution. Now, am I saying we are there? No, but what I am saying is if our system doesn't change and change for the better, we're going to descend into a place economically that we do not want to go. And hopefully we can turn it around, and that's exactly what we're going to try to start tonight, Rick, with this protest. Yeah. Back to you.
Well, we're going to see, and I'm looking forward to it. We're just a couple of minutes away. We're going to take a quick break, wrap things up when we get back, and hope to see you out on the Capitol grounds there on 3rd Street by State. Right back after this.
Back to America. Rick Smith.
In 1897, miners at collieries throughout northeastern Pennsylvania's anthracite coal region had had enough. Conditions were grueling and life was difficult. Miners were frequently cheated out of pay, overcharged for supplies, some they never wanted or received, forced to live in captive company-owned towns, shop at overpriced company-owned stores, even mandated to use the company doctor since fees were deducted automatically from the miner's pay. This, combined with mine owners forcing longer unpaid hours and the Anti-Immigrant Campbell Act of 1897, taxing mine owners for the use of non-native labor, drove miners to strike. Spontaneously starting in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, workers marched north to get other miners to join in the struggle. Their demands were modest, a 10-cent pay raise and a reduction in the cost of gunpowder. They also wanted the freedom to shop in non-company-owned stores of their choosing and see a doctor not owned by the coal company. As the miners moved northward toward Hazleton, mine owners, determined to crush the workers' protest, sent their company-paid police force and strike breakers. Local law enforcement was also on the side of mine owners. Luzerne County Sheriff James Martin, a former mine foreman, deputized 102 local men, arming them with Winchester rifles and sidearms. The group of some 400 miners marching peacefully and unarmed in rows of fours moved onward toward Latimer. Stephen Urich, joining the group outside of Hazleton, taking with him the American flag, shouted, "We have nothing to worry about because we have the American flag to protect us." Within hours and a hail of Winchester bullets, Stephen Urich was gunned down in cold blood, his beloved American flag drenched in his blood and the blood of those who lay murdered and wounded. Eyewitnesses said the sheriff and his hired killers mowed the men down like grass. More than 20 men were murdered on that September day, and more than 50 were wounded, many shot in the back in Labor's Forgotten Massacre. The sheriff and his murderous band were tried for their part in the Latimer Massacre and found not guilty of murdering 20 unarmed peaceful demonstrators. Lest we never forget, or as the wife of a miner whose life was stolen from him told her children, "You can forgive, but you can't forget." This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.ricksmithshow.com.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Show. Ever check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there, or if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and you can take the program wherever you go. So tomorrow, or just in a couple of minutes, the Global Day of Action, folks are all around the world are going to be standing in solidarity with the folks on Wall Street, the Occupy Wall Street crowd. Here in a couple of minutes, just down the road, folks are going to be gathering here in Harrisburg for Occupy Harrisburg. If you can't make it down, their website, OccupyHarrisburg.org. Maybe you'll be able to watch some of the stuff's going on, that's going on. Also, OccupyTogether.org. They're going to have some stuff from around the globe. So it's worth taking a couple minutes and checking out. I had to laugh today. I turned on my computer and there was a picture of a woman, probably looked like she had a long road to hoe. You know, some tough times, you know, little drink, little, you know, this, little of that. You know, mid-50s, you know, looked like she led a pretty hard life. And then you read the caption. Daughter of Walmart founder Sam Walton spent the final hours of her birthday in jail Friday night after being arrested for drunk driving. And I'm going, wait a second. What is a billionaire doing drinking and driving? What are you doing out driving around Texas? She was held for 9 hours. You got to love that. And she was released on a $1,000 bond. She paid the $925 fee. She refused to blow into the little thing. A couple hours later, they finally had her to blow 0.16, still double the legal limit there, which I was surprised to find out. I thought they'd have like a 3, and since it is Texas, everything's bigger in Texas, I guess, except for the drunk driving part of it. But yeah, she misses $21 billion drinking and driving her own car. What are you, dense? And the answer, I guess, is yes.
Yes, yes, yes. That only applies to those poor people. And I got to give the cop credit. Whoever pulled her over has to have stones the size of Gibraltar. Really, I mean, this is a billionaire we're talking about. Now, will he have a job in 6 months? I would love to find out. Anyway, finally, someone in South Carolina, I think, agrees with me, or North Carolina agrees with me. I know they call South Carolina the Lesser Carolina, so North Carolina, step up maybe. But I was reading this article by a guy named Lyndon Kay. He's the Daily News staff writer down there in North Carolina. And the headline read, "Surprised by Statewide Poll on Gay Marriage." Evidently, in North Carolina, 56% of the folks don't want gay marriage banned. Shocking to me. So he goes through this whole thing and, you know what it means and why. But then he finishes up with something I have said numerous times over the years, and I always get that lemon look on people's faces, like they just bit into a lemon. He writes, "I don't care what two consenting adults do. I don't care whether two men or two women get married. You real men don't like gay sex? Let homosexuals get married. Nothing puts the brakes on sex faster than wedding bells." And I've been saying that for years and trying to convince my homophobe friends that, why do you care? But finally someone put it in print, and good for him. Also good news in California. Governor Jerry Brown has signed a law that will allow same-sex couples who married in the state but now reside in another state, one that may not recognize same-sex marriage, the recognition of divorce. The new law stipulates that if a couple got married in California but lives in a state that won't grant them a divorce, which is presumed if the state doesn't recognize their marriage, the California court will have jurisdiction and grant them dissolution. So there you go. Now they have all of the freedoms. They can get married and the wonders of marriage and the wonders of divorce. Last story. From California, state and local officials are investigating the death of a teenage boy. Turns out, Armando Ramirez, 16-year-old kid, and his brother, Alejo Ramirez, 22, were working for a recycling company. They were down in this tunnel area doing some cleaning. They were overcome by fumes, and they were dead. When he was dead, the other one was taken to the hospital. Serious condition, the third employee harmed as well. Now, you listen to the relatives of the story. They told the newspaper, the L.A. Times, that the two brothers were issued only painter's masks and rubber boots to guard against the fumes. Now, they complained about the fumes for some time. But again, don't care who they are. Just give them a paper mask and a couple of boots. The tunnel was tested. It was tested positive for hydrogen sulfide, a gas released during the composting that can damage the brain and central nervous system. And in this case, killed this kid. Now, where they're focusing? They're focusing on the kid, the fact that the kid used a fake ID to get the job. Not that workers were harmed, not that workers were in harm's way, just that this kid who had to figure out how to get a job used a fake ID. Sad, sad day. So here we go. I guess in a couple of minutes it's going to go on again. OccupyHarrisburg.org is the website, and OccupyTogether.org for tomorrow's global Day of Solidarity. I'm looking forward to what's going to happen this weekend. We will bring back as much as we can on Monday, talk about this, so much more. I hope you have a great weekend. I hope you come out. Bring out the whole family. I think I'm going to bring the kids and spend the day talking to people and interacting and hopefully continuing the conversation that we absolutely, desperately need to have. Have a great weekend. See you back here on Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. The must is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.